Steve and Johnny. Johnny and Steve. That's awesome, this one. Steve and Johnny. Johnny and Steve.
I think that means we're on the radio.
Yes, we are on the radio. And where are we broadcasting from, Steve?
Last time I checked, we are coming to you live and direct from the studios of WKGC-FM high atop the Charles Hilton Center for the Advanced Technology and Hospitality Management at Gulf Coast State College in Panama City, Florida, and I'm out of words.
Yeah, that's why I tossed it to you. By the way, I did post pictures of our drive into work tonight, and as I said, so please don't bother to comment. It doesn't look anything like Chicago. No, it's not Chicago. No, that's not Lakeshore Drive. Right. That's 98 Front Beach Road taking you over the Hathaway Bridge into the town of Panama City. So I don't even think we encountered a pothole for me to have a pothole picture.
No, we didn't.
Or three, no. Which is the norm every Saturday night.
So go to our Facebook page. Cleverly, the address is facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show. And you can see all of the pictures that Johnny posted as we were driving in tonight. Mm-hmm. And we have a ton of things planned for tonight. We're going to be reconnecting with a longtime friend that we haven't talked to in much too long a time, Ed Curran. Longtime listeners remember that Ed used to be on WGN Radio. We first worked with him at another radio station. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that later.
That was 40 years ago.
40 years ago?
Yes, I know.
Okay.
And Ed looks fabulous because he's on television all the time. I'm like, he looks the same as he did 40 years ago.
You can see him doing weather over at Channel 2.
Mm-hmm.
Then a little later tonight, this is the time of year where if you're lucky, you live in an area where there is a drive-in movie theater.
Yep.
And we're going to talk to the owners of the 34 Drive-In in Earlville, Illinois. This is their opening weekend and their 70th anniversary.
Yes, and the Bottomleys, the him and her, the husband and wife, they've got a great story about the role that the drive-in plays in their very own life. And now they are the owners and operators of the 34 Drive-In.
And I bet they have stories.
They have stories. Don't you know it? How many drive-ins do you think there are in the whole United States of America as of now?
Oh, there used to be, back in the day, there were, I believe, several thousand. Now, mm-hmm. I think there are probably under 1,000, maybe like 500 or something like that.
More like 300.
300?
Yeah.
Okay.
How about the state of Illinois? How many do you think we have operating in the state of Illinois?
State of Illinois, I would say probably 7.
11.
Well, 7-Eleven.
Okay. 7-Eleven, yes. And, of course, that takes you all the way downstate. You know, Springfield, some small towns downstate.
Mm-hmm.
But we're fortunate to have a couple that are within driving distance of downtown Chicago. And I'm excited we get to meet the Bottomleys and talk with them. Yeah. I said, as long as you have a pickle on a stick and your concession stand, we'll have you on the radio.
Is that cold?
And they assured me that they serve a pickle on the stick. So I'm good with it.
Okay.
I don't ask much. Give me some popcorn and pickle on a stick. I actually just like saying that, too. Oh, my. What a day.
Yeah.
We have survived Record Store Day, and I have to admit that I've spent way too much of my day studying the lyrics of the new Taylor Swift album. I know. It's a cult. I'm guilty. But there's one song in particular that got our attention.
And that's the tease. We'll take a break, and we'll tell you what song really got our attention coming up on WGN. I wonder why Julian picked that song.
Wouldn't have anything to do with the date.
Young Julian.
Originally done by Paul McCartney and Wings. Which version is that, Julian?
That is the one from Wings.
Oh,
is that the one from... Boy, it didn't sound like them for some reason.
It's because we're so far away.
Okay. And we have another song that relates to 420 Day that we are going to get to.
Yes.
And those of you that are longtime listeners, I will share that it's the song done by our friend Bob Young.
The classic done by our friend Bob Young.
Yes, the classic song.
Yes, yes. So this is not only 420 Day, when since the 70s people have used it as an excuse to celebrate cannabis.
Yeah.
It's also Record Store Day, and it was also the weekend where we have, some of us have become obsessed with trying to understand what Taylor Swift is telling us in her new album.
And the song we were talking about, we will only give you the name of the song. Because this particular song is much like our closing song by Red Peters. We will never play all of it on the radio.
Well, there's a clean version. There's a radio version.
Of Taylor's song?
Of Taylor's song.
There is not a clean version of Red Peters' song.
No, there's not. You're right. Right. So the song we're talking about is called Florida. And we're in a studio with some Floridians. Did you guys know that Taylor did a song entitled Florida?
I was made aware of it.
Yes.
A couple days ago.
And guess what? I don't think it's real good.
And we're Taylor Swift fans.
I was going to ask, is that Florida you don't think is real good, or Taylor?
Actually, she's fine. I find it very catchy, but I wanted to know what this Florida song was all about. And she says, well, I watch a lot of Dateline kind of shows, you know, crime shows where people have these crimes that they've committed and they immediately need to skip town. And where do they go? Florida. Oh, yay. And one of her hook lines is, Florida, it's a hell of a drug.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And the other hook line, we will not say, but the F-bomb is liberally sprinkled throughout.
And it's not friendly either.
No.
That's not the word she's looking for. I did not know that she was the ambassador of Record Store Day. You knew that, Caleb?
I know she was last year, yeah.
Oh, she is. Caleb Jordan's with us in studio. You did a thing called a Vinyl-thon today.
Yeah, so in kind of excitement for Record Store Day, the College Radio Foundation, kind of in partnership with a bunch of college radio stations throughout the states, puts on Vinyl-thon, which is a two-day event over the weekend. And the goal is to play at least 1 hour of vinyl-only programming on your college radio station.
Wow.
Cool.
The crowning achievement is to do 24 hours.
Yeah.
But at least for the alternation here at Gulf Coast State College, for our first year, we made it through 4 hours successfully.
Good.
It was a great opportunity for the students to really get a feel for what it's like to have to juggle physical media and what it's like.
Did you experiment at all with doing production with vinyl? Because one of the coolest things back when I first started in radio was discovering how to do phasing, where you would get the same song on two different turntables, start it, and then you just very slightly slow it, so you get this kind of a effect.
We were lucky to back cue successfully for 4 hours. Next year, we'll look at at the next level.
I'd be happy
stuff.
To show up and give a demonstration of how that's done.
Yeah.
So did they pick out the vinyl that they wanted to play? Is that how it worked?
Yeah, we scraped together whatever we had on hand, and they played a set. We had two DJs tag team. So one would run the board, one would run the decks.
Two turntables you were working with?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Wait a minute. What is this? One is running the board and the other is running the Tom Hoots, who's also in the studio with us, shaking his head.
I was there this morning, and I went, wait, when I did this, I didn't have anybody running the decks for me.
And, okay, now this is really going to date me. Not only did you do everything by yourself, but if you were doing talk, if you were doing telephone talk, you had two separate reel-to-reel tape recorders. You would start recording on one of the tape recorders. Then you would run the tape past that to the second tape recorder, and then you would bring up the volume on the playback head of the second tape recorder. That's how you got your 9-second delay.
So if somebody dropped a
physical 9-second delay.
Physical 9-second
delay. I love it.
It was the distance between the startup reel on the first machine
and the
take-up reel on the second machine. And that's how, and you potted up the volume to the
And then you put these stone discs on your turntable, right? And like the Flintstones, you used your feet to pedal them.
That's right.
And 10 years after you were doing that, we were doing it with cart machines. So we had mm-hmm. two cart machines, and they would cover us for our 8-second delay at that time.
Yeah.
We were a little more trusting to give you an 8-second delay. But it just sounded awful because it would drop out, and you know the listener knows that something's happened because there's that big dropout, and then you come back.
By the way, speaking of listeners knowing that something is happening, we should pause for a second.
Yes.
And introduce all of the people who are helping us do what we're doing tonight. We have our regular crew up in Chicago at WGN Radio. Brett is not able to say boo because he's working from a different studio, so everybody wave hi to Brett. A little later, Adam Phillips will be joining us. Ron Brown in the newsroom. Gabe will be joining him in the newsroom. Julian is producing for us up there. Down here at WKGC, we have Caleb Jordan, Becca Stark, and Tom Hoots.
Woohoo!
All these people trying to make sure that we sound like we know what the heck we're doing.
And we just come in here and flap our jaw. Yeah. How do you like that? Yes. Well, can I just say, a number of people have texted tonight. We will get to the shout-outs later on. We're at 312-981-7200. Thank you for your kind messages. People have said, I hope your weather is good. It is.
It's wonderful.
Oh, unbelievable.
It has been so nice.
It's summertime. It is officially summertime.
Shh, it's hot. 35 in Chicago. Don't say
I know. I couldn't believe Ron said 35.
Ron, you did say
that's
35,
obscene.
Right?
Yeah, so we've had some delightful weather here, and we're enjoying it. Coming up, we'll talk a little bit about the last time you guys heard us, we were actually on the John Williams Show.
Yes, we were recounting our adventures trying to get to O'Hare Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an interesting journey.
We had planned on being here on Monday. We had our tickets. We'd had them for months, and we'd planned on being here. And we gave ourselves 3 hours to make mm-hmm. a 20-minute trip to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
3 hours. We figured once we get to the airport, we're fine. We can kill time, you know, just have some coffee, just wait. But after we sat on the ramp that takes you into O'Hare Airport, we sat there for 90 minutes.
Yep.
We realized that we were going to miss our flight, and we found out that, in fact, there were 40 people lying in the road blocking access to the airport.
This is one of two cities. The other was
the Golden Gate,
the Golden Gate Bridge,
San Francisco.
And it was a protest.
Yep. And when we realized that we probably were not going to make our flight, I was able to check, and I did see that, in fact, we could take the exact same flights the very next day, and there were still some tickets available. Mm-hmm. So I quickly called the airline.
And the scary thing there was when Johnny called the airline, and the airlines didn't know that O'Hare Airport had been shut down by the protest.
Yes. And it had been shut down for well over an hour by that time. And I said, well, I would like to rebook for tomorrow because we're not going to make our flight. And she said, okay, all right, that will be $400.
So what? Who, huh?
I said, you can do me a huge favor because we ain't going any place, and you can talk to somebody in a supervisory position and tell them what the situation is here, and maybe we can get that waived. She was gone so long, I was sure she'd hung up on me because there was no music or anything playing. Mm-hmm. And when she came back, she said, well, you're right. The airport's closed, and we've agreed that we can waive your $400 extra fee. So when we were told that, in fact, we could book for the next day after we sat on the ramp for 90 minutes.
And we have to give a shout out to our Uber driver, yes. Ryan, who was just as mellow and as cool as he could be.
Yes. Of course, he got two fares. He to the airport and back home again. But we could see off in the distance, if we got over on the shoulder, we could get on the Indiana ramp and we could get out of that parking lot.
Because literally, we hadn't moved in an hour and a half.
Yeah. So we did. We exited as though we were going to Indiana. We circled back and we got back home. So again, you know, we were flexible. It's not like we had meetings. It was not pressing. We were able to make the trip the next day. Not a big deal.
But
not the case for a lot of other people.
And here's where, and we don't get into a lot of serious things on this show, but we're going to at least pose something for you to think about.
Mm-hmm.
We're absolutely in favor of, you should be able to protest. If there's something that you want to bring attention to, you should do that.
Peaceful protest.
Having said that, I don't know how well this protest brought public opinion to the side of the people that were protesting. That's right. A separate discussion. But on one hand, yes, Constitution, peaceful protest. Flip side of that is, if you're putting someone's life in danger, potentially if there is a problem and ambulance, whatever, is not able to get through, mm-hmm. that's a different side of that conversation. Do I have the answer? No, but I think it's a conversation that needs to be had.
Well, a representative from Geneva has proposed a piece of legislation. He did that on Wednesday, and his bill reads that if you are going to block an exceptionally busy public right-of-way for more than 5 minutes in a way that would prevent police or other first responders from getting through, you would be charged with a felony, not a misdemeanor. So this is something that also in San Francisco got some momentum because the DA has proposed that, in fact, it be viewed as a felony, not a misdemeanor, in hopes of mm-hmm. making people aware this is really serious. You're going to do some jail time, and we mean it.
I understand the ACLU is not too happy with this,
no.
And I am not at all anti-ACLU. In fact, I absolutely support the ACLU, but I don't think this is one of those there is just one clear answer questions. Again, as I said, a serious, not argumentative, but a serious, how do we find a solution to this problem that allows people to protest and allows, if you have a situation that requires
right.
ambulance, whatever, to get through to save someone's life, how do you balance this? I don't have the answer, but I think a conversation needs to be had.
So we have a bill now in Illinois that some say has gone to that special place where bills go to die, that really there's not a lot mm-hmm. of excitement about it. Who knows? That may change. But in San Francisco, the DA has proposed that if you were stuck in traffic on the bridge, you could very well be deemed a victim. You were held prisoner. And you may be eligible for some form of monetary retribution.
And wasn't there a previous case that set
yes.
a precedent that he's trying
right.
to hang his hat on?
Because there was an ambulance that had to be called in a previous protest. The ambulance couldn't get to the woman. And when it ended up going to the courts, the ambulance, as I understand it, the ambulance fee was paid for by the protesters because this person was put in jeopardy, and thankfully they were okay once they got to the hospital and such. But that's how San Francisco's looking at it. Mm-hmm. Chicago, different. Just simply, if you block traffic for more than 5 minutes on a major thoroughfare, on a road where first responders would be traveling, then you could very well be charged with a felony.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where it's going to go. Some people feel that, in particular, that this is an effort just to squash the latest protest, the pro-Palestinian protest,
right.
that it's not just, you know, in general, we've been needing to do this for some time. There's some thought that it's just specifically targeting this particular protest.
And in the minds of some people, it may be. But again, I think it's hard to do in this political climate. But if you can dial down the rhetoric and try to come up with a solution that allows for everybody to have some
yeah.
reasonable outcome.
Because the Constitution says, you know, if you are on a street and you are going to peacefully be protesting and the people that were in front of the airport were lying in the road, they weren't hurting anybody.
Right.
They were putting themselves in danger because mm-hmm. there were a lot of angry people backed up. But, and as I say, again, and apparently this was brought up on Mincing Rascals with John before our show, we were lucky. I mean, we got home and we were like,
we were in a comfortable Uber.
Yeah.
With a nice guy. We sat there, we made some phone calls, and we did what we wanted to do the next 24 hours later.
There were people that did contact John and they missed funerals, and
yeah.
one woman missed her chemo treatment because she was sitting in traffic. And so
again, it yeah. impacted her health.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's what San Francisco's looking at. If mm-hmm. if you are if you feel you were victimized by this, then we think you might have a legal leg to stand on. So it's going to be interesting to see how that one fleshes out.
And again, do we have the answers? Heck no. But my strongest suggestion is please, and I know it's so hard, particularly in this election year, to dial down the rhetoric, but try to do that and think, is there some possible solution that would work for everybody?
Let's do something before August, since we have this little convention that's coming to town in August.
Yeah, and you don't think there'd be any protests for the convention, do you?
Well, there's already been public statements.
No.
That we need a permit, but if we can't get a permit, there are some that say, well, the heck with it.
I'm aghast.
There's going to be a lot.
I'm appalled.
There's going to be so much activity.
I'm going to take a break.
Oh, okay.
So we'll come back with more on WGN.
Is everybody ready? Is everybody ready? Is everybody ready? Here we go. You know it makes me want to shout.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Yeah, we're going to do some shout-outs, but we have to get some video set up. You have to see Becca dancing. The last time we did this, I remember we were talking about we need some cameras because Becca has some moves.
Yeah, we can call them that. Yeah.
They're perfect for radio, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Okay, I want to start in our shout-outs, and we have so many people to cover tonight, and thank you all. I think I've counted 11 states. Well, if I include Illinois, we have 12 states that are tuned in tonight, and a whole bunch of folks in Florida are listening tonight. But I'm going to start with Laura Helm. I'm going to let her jump to the front of the line.
Okay.
Because Laura says, why Panama City Beach? What is it? Did you visit other cities before you settled on Panama City Beach? How did you end up there?
Okay.
That's a good question.
Long story short, I grew up on the south side of Chicago. My dad worked for U.S. Steel. In 1969, my dad took an early retirement and came down to the Gulf Coast. Originally went to Gulfport, Mississippi, wound up in Panama City Beach. For 10 years, my dad was the city clerk of Panama City Beach, and then for 10 years after that, he was the city clerk at Callaway. My dad passed away back in 1991, and I first came down here in 1970 when you could shoot a cannon off on the beach and not hit anything.
And we have to go to town to go to McDonald's because McDonald's would close on the beach because, you know what, there weren't any people around.
And when my dad passed away, we decided to keep my dad's little yellow house, and we still have it to this day. Mm-hmm. And
What did Daddy say? He came for the...
My dad said he came for the climate and stayed for the people.
And, so take that, Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
That's the flip side.
So that's why Panama City Beach, and where we're broadcasting from tonight, is not in Panama City Beach. It's across, there's a big bridge, the Hathaway Bridge, that separates Panama City Beach from Panama City. And we are broadcasting at Gulf Coast State College in Panama City. And by the way, Southwest Airlines, if you're listening, you're flying into Panama City Beach, not Panama City.
Sometimes I get worried because they say just Panama, and I think we're going to step off the plane.
Where are we going?
Like, well, yeah, I'm in the wrong country.
What?
That took a long time. It doesn't look anything like Panama City Beach. So, Laura Helm, thank you for asking. Good question, and thank you for giving us a chance to explain that to you kids. Jim Smith is listening tonight. He's got two new AA batteries in his AM transistor.
Yeah, we may need to use those.
We're plugged in, Steve. We're not doing battery anymore. Patricia Tentari is tuned in. Thank you, Patricia. She's a great friend to this radio show. Jan Robertson is tuning in on a Fire Stick from Chicago.
Cool.
Lloyd Moncrief is in Ottawa. Jan Spiegel is tuned in. Deb Scott is listening in Hoffman Estates. And her mom, Alice Selke, is a longtime listener and fan. And Alice, thank you for tuning in. Chuck Snitchler, number one fan to this radio station, mm-hmm. to our show, and just
Chuck who has to use a different Facebook page because the Facebook czar said, "Oh, we don't like that
trouble?
One."
No, I guess he got
put in Facebook jail or something, but he has another page. So.
Next week, we're going to spend some time talking with Patrick about Facebook because there are a whole lot of changes going on that are not real good. Our buddy Bobby Danos out in Sandwich is back and hopefully feeling fine as frog's hair, as we say.
How fine does frog's hair feel?
It's mighty fine.
Becca, have you ever felt frog's hair?
It's mighty fine.
If I did, it was so fine, I didn't notice.
Okay.
It was so fine, yes. Jan Reinhardt is listening from the laboratory. Diane Vasquez, who does all of our wonderful graphics. Thank you, Diane. She did another one tonight. Scott Cooper is in Naperville. Bonnie Nelson. Brian Lefevre's in Bridgeport. Janet Appenzeller is tuned in. Christine Falling in Plainfield. Helen Thomas in K-Town. Jean Jacobson in Lincolnshire. Barbara Van Osdale in Salmonat. Karen Burkhalter is tuned in. Kathy Coates is in Sterling. Rita Reiki is in Fort Worth, Texas. Kevin Roush tuned in from Florida. Becky Offsayoff of Northbrook. Peter Jukbowitz in Citrus County, Florida. John Couture is in Warren, Michigan. Robin Aiken in Port Charlotte, Florida. Eric Baum is tuned in from Wells Beach, Maine, sending once again a cool picture from Maine. Carrie Johnson is listening and said, welcome to the Florida weather. A lot different from Chicago, isn't it? She's in Palm Coast, Florida. Bonnie Pearson in Grays Lake. Terry Knight in Batavia. Ed Wales is tuned in from the UP, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Judy B. is listening on her Sea Crane in Oak Lawn. Mary Gold in Tinley Park. Linda Moeller is in the Oklahoma Panhandle tuned in. Gary Gray is in New Lisbon, Wisconsin. Peggy Rockus is tuned in. Steve Colner is in K-Town. Also, we've got Stacy in Algonquin. She's got a birthday on Sunday.
Happy birthday to you. Yeah. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to Stacy.
And Sherry are tuned in. Sherry Hanrahan is in Romeoville. Dean is in Indy. Davey's in Mount Prospect. Robin's in Dyer, Indiana. Bonnie's in Butternut. And last week, she explained that it's named after the butternut tree. Not the bread? Not butternut bread, no.
But I always get hungry every time I hear that.
Jim Gajewski is listening in Aurora. Scott is in Pierre, South Dakota. Terry's in Morris. George is in Augusta, Georgia. Rich Wade is in Missouri. Dwayne is listening in. Celine Ellers is listening. And I started out with Laura Helm and her question about how did we end up in Florida.
So now you know how we ended up in Florida.
Yes. But thank you all for tuning in. And if I missed you, I'll catch you next week, I promise, because I'm looking at like three or four different sources. In fact, I have access to text tonight and listening from South Cook County. That's Peter Lawrence in Sauk Village. He just signed in. And somebody says, sounds like my microphone is not on. Have you got me turned off?
Would I ever do that to you?
I don't know. Is that like the ultimate husband trick? You turn off
Would
my microphone?
Would I ever do that to you?
I don't know.
Hmm. Well, we should mention we got a bunch of things coming up tonight. Ed Curran is going to join us.
Yes.
And also, next week, a very special guest will be joining us. We're going to be talking with Marshall Chess. If you don't know the name Marshall Chess is the son of the Chess Records co-founder, Leonard Chess.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a new album that is coming out that has to do with a lot of the vintage records that they've remastered and things like that. So we'll talk with him about that. And you can get to us anytime you want to, 312-981-7200. More coming up. Stay with us at WGN Radio.
Rain gotta get inside, so tell me where the man.
Dave Kennedy, Johnny Pucker, WGN Radio. That's Eddie Benjamin and Weatherman. And we thought that would be an appropriate way to introduce a guy that we have known for longer than we have been married.
Yep, and we just celebrated our 40th anniversary. He's worn many, many hats in Chicago broadcasting. He's worked at a few radio stations. He was newsman for many years. He was talk show host. He was the first guy that we knew that talked about technology and made us understand it.
In fact, he was into technology on one of my birthdays when he helped you surprise me with this wonderful Denon AM stereo radio that we still have.
That's true. And now he wears the weather hat. He's the weatherman over on Channel 2. And he's Ed Curran. Ed, thank you for joining us tonight.
Hey, Ed. How are you guys?
Good, good. We had this big buildup about all the radio stations that you worked at, all the hats that you've worn over the years, from newsman to talk show host to...
I know. I just can't hold a job. It's terrible.
No, no. You've always been cutting edge. Come on. Am I correct? Weren't you the first guy that started talking about AOL around the radio station way back 100 years ago?
Oh, my gosh. Goes before that. A Prodigy.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Prodigy. Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. But my AOL, when I had Steve Case, who created AOL on the air, Steve Case, AOL was so small, they had like a get-together in Chicago at a local restaurant, and he gave me my username, which was edcurran@AOL.com. Which I still have. Don't write me there because I seldom check it. But that's how long ago it was. Yeah, it was amazing. People are, I mean, and I feel like I'm 150 years old, but you guys will remember, I tell people that back when we first started writing stuff on AOL, when they were associated with Tribune Company, mm-hmm. we couldn't put photos up online. I mean,
yes.
that's how
yes.
how ancient it was.
Yes, yes.
Now, are there any prizes, Ed? Because I have some of the old AOL installation discs.
Those, you know, I have found, and you may laugh about it, but they make great coasters.
Yes, they
I believe
do.
They would.
Yes.
Really
yeah.
wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a technology trivia question for you. What was the name of the web browser that you got with AOL? It was something like Web Crawler. They had some weird little icon for it, and that was how you would supposedly search.
Yeah, because you could go through AOL or you could go through a separate browser. Mark Andreessen created the first browser? Was that Netscape? Or was that Mozilla?
Well, that originally
he was right here in Illinois.
Yeah, originally that was Netscape, but that was different from the it was like an internal to AOL thing that would go out on the internet. It wasn't a separate browser.
Yeah.
Proving that I need a life if I'm still thinking about this.
Yeah, he's still pondering these things.
Yeah, I mean, it's, oh my gosh, look at all the things we've gone through that time, and you've gone from being able to, not post photos online to be able to broadcast audio and video
sure.
around the world at the push of a button.
Yeah.
Well, and the mere fact that as we sit here, I have this wonderful, it's a flip phone, and if I want to do video around the world, I can do it from the little flip phone that's kind of mm-hmm. like something you would see on Star Trek years ago.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
oh, yeah.
How many years were you afternoons with Al on WGN?
I don't know, 1986 or 87 to like 91, something like that.
Yeah, that was my recollection too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Because people have texted, so is this the Ed Curran? Oh, I never put two and two together. That's the same guy that was on the afternoons, Alan Ed.
Okay, I know there's a bunch of things we want to get to, but just talking to you, and a bunch of things keep jumping in my mind. What was the thing, I believe it was, I forget if you were doing afternoons or evenings, and Johnny and I were at some shopping mall, and we couldn't get out of our car because you guys were broadcasting. It had to do with the they were digging, trying to get
the little girl in the well.
Girl in the well.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
And you guys broadcast when she came out of that well, and we sat in the parking lot and wept, like many, many people who were listening.
Right. Oh, yeah, that was a dramatic story, and everybody was waiting and seeing if they'd get her out, and they did. Finally, for those of you who haven't caught up, she's out. So she's fine. just in case you know, lost track.
Yes,
The news cycle can be a bit long. You know, she's out, she's fine, but everybody was waiting for her to come out. And where was that? Was that in Texas, or was that?
I think it was.
It's
Texas sounds right to me.
But sometimes you stop and you think about those big stories that you actually were. The conduit. You were the guy that was bringing the information to the audience. You know, stories like that, where we all just stopped and we just gazed at the radio and hung on to every word. You got to pinch yourself sometimes, because I know I do when I think about the world events that we covered, and I think, wow.
I remember when I first got into radio and having to go on the air at what was then WEFA in Waukegan and say, and the only person, the only mayor I had known, and Richard Daley is dead.
Yes.
And I remember my voice shaking, you know, and doing that, or the crash of Flight 191, where I actually went out to the scene of that, or being on the air with Al Lerner, who, and people ask me all the time, how's Al? Al is fine. Al's in Chicago. Al's doing great. Us, the two of us being on the air when the Plainfield tornado hit, which is the only EF5 we've ever had in our area. So, and I drove through there the next day and interviewed some folks out there, and, that had a big impact on me. So, yeah, you remember those milestones, those touchstones that are there from your career. And you remember them like yesterday, being on the air at Channel 5 doing the weather and having 9/11 happen.
Right.
And having been in New York at LaGuardia at 9 o'clock the previous night, because I was in New York to judge the Hamaker-Schlemmer Search for Invention contest, and had toyed with going to the World Trade Center, but I had to get back to Chicago to be on the air the next day. So all those things, boy, you look back, and we've sure seen a lot. And we sound like we're 125 years old now, don't we?
But we all look so great on radio.
We do.
You, on the other hand, you put your face on television. And
oh,
I'm like,
that's right.
It's a brave man. Now, did you first do weather reporting on WGN-TV while you were still with WGN Radio?
No, I had actually, I'd been doing some tech reporting on the WGN Morning News, and that was at about 1996, and I had been taking weather courses because I wanted to do the weather, but I wanted to know what I was doing. I wanted some kind of certification.
Yeah.
I didn't want to just be doing the weather to do the weather. So in 1996, I was doing tech stuff, techno gadgets on the WGN morning show on TV. And then sometime around at the auto show, actually, the following year, 1997, the news director at the time, Carol Fowler, was acting news director, came to me and said, at the auto show, she said, "What is it I heard about you? Oh, yeah, you took weather courses." And I said, She says, "Would you like to do the weather? You do a good job with tech, and we have an opening on the weekends and for some fill-in. And I got people willing to move here from across the country to do the weather at our station. And in your case, you try it. If it doesn't work out, nobody gets hurt. You live here already. It's not like you got to move here. You got to do anything." So I had to do an audition tape for them, and I did that. and they still hired me, which was surprising. So I started doing the weather there, but actually the whole journey towards the weather started when I was at GN Radio, and we're talking the early 90s, and I had always wanted to do weather, but you got to realize, when I went to college, I wanted to be a broadcaster, but mm-hmm. weather, we're talking the era of slide rules. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. and math scared the heck out of me. I just, you know, I just could not wrap my head around math, and I was scared of it. And I still tell school kids to this day that if you really want to do it and you're scared of it, like math, but you can apply it to something, it becomes so much easier. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I was a GN Radio. I really wanted to do weather. And I went to Roger Treemstra, and I said, the late Roger Treemstra was a, mm-hmm. a meteorologist at WGN Radio, and he was on the morning show, and a wonderful man, and he just passed away recently. And mm-hmm. I said, you know, I want to do weather, and he told me about the off-campus program that became available around that time. And so I would take courses over the period of several years, and I would take proctored exams at the National Weather Service so that I could get my education, get a certification from the American Meteorological Society. But before I went into TV weather, the second person I called was somebody who'd be on the show once in a while on GN Radio, which was Skilling.
Of course.
I said, Tom, yeah. I'm thinking about going into weather. What do you think? Eddie, I got to tell you, it's a young man's business. It's a young man's business. How old are you? You're about to turn 40? I'll tell you, it's a young man's business. So I wound up starting working at GMTV with Skilling and with Bill Snyder and Paul Conrad and yeah. Jim Ramsey, who was a wonderful help for me because I trained under him when I was there as far as the equipment was concerned and stuff like that. So it all has a WGN connection, first with Roger Treemstra and then to Tom Skilling, who we used to have on the air mm-hmm. and do some wonderful stuff with. And eventually winding up at GN for a few years, and then I got a chance to go to Channel 5, and the folks at GN were like, you know, that's great. They have more opportunities right now, and so I went there for a couple of years before coming to Channel 2 in late 2002.
Wow, 2002? I didn't realize yeah. you'd been there that long.
I know. The time flies by.
I know. And it gets yeah. faster as we get older, too, doesn't it?
So is yeah. the title of your autobiography going to be Behind the Green Screen?
Yes, right. Behind the Green Screen. Yes, yes. I don't know what it'll be rated, but that's what it'll be, Behind the Green Screen.
Well, we've got so many
yeah,
things
it's been
that we
a
want
real
to talk
journey.
To. We got so many things we want to talk to you about. But we want to segue to some real serious stuff.
Yes, yes.
That sadly you had to deal with, but we were so glad you came out on the other side of this. And we should mention that April is National Donate Life Month, and mm-hmm. that is one of the many reasons that we wanted to talk to Ed Curran, because you have been an organ recipient, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I was told back in 2018, I ended up in the hospital after having some terrible symptoms, and I ended up in the hospital, and you can't believe what it's like to just be in there, and they're working you up for everything, and this team of nephrologists comes in, and the one says to me, well, talk to your doctor about getting on the transplant list. Mm. And I'm like, what? And that was the beginning of a journey that was pretty scary and tough. And thanks to my sister, Patty, Patty Orthwine, she and her husband, Wayne, would drive down to Chicago from central Wisconsin where they live. And she went through all the tests. And I wound up getting a kidney from her, and, you know, quite possibly saved my life. I was on dialysis, home dialysis, for 2 years, and I was working at the same time.
How many hours did the dialysis require you each day or night?
Every night, 8 hours and 45 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. So pretty much,
how on earth were you able to do that
and still go to work
well, and be on camera?
It would be working while you're sleeping. So for part of it, you're awake. For part of it, you're asleep. But it's still a disruptive 8 hours and 45 minutes. And dialysis is a wonderful thing and keeps you alive. It's not perfect. And it's also a dangerous situation to be in. You can develop infections. There's a lot that can happen. It's not a great place to be. Mm-hmm. So for me to be able to get a kidney transplant from my sister, which took, it took almost, I want to say about 10 months to go through all the testing and approvals and everything. My sister's a little older than I am. And when she called me to say that she wanted to donate, she called me and left a message, give me a call. And I didn't call her back for a day or two. And when I finally called her back, she says, well, I'm thinking, I want to do this. And I was just taken aback. I mean, just I can't even tell you when somebody tells you, and she said, they told me that I could. I've been waiting for approval. It took a while, and there's so many different things they have to check. And as I said, she's a little older than me, and I told her, I said, I told people I want the Cadillac of kidneys. I wasn't thinking a 1949 Cadillac, but that's okay.
Yeah.
And it seems to be working okay. So it is the gift of life, and it is amazing. And it's so wonderful to hear that just recently we had a pig donate a kidney to somebody through an altered kidney, altered a little bit genetically so they can do it. And, other animal parts have been used for humans, valves for hearts and things like that. Yeah. And what we really need is that you need donors to donate right now. Maybe in the future, something like pig kidneys will be available to people. And also, it'd be great to see an artificial kidney. But in the meantime, there aren't enough kidneys. And there are about 100,000 people out there waiting for kidneys.
Were you on a list? Were
you living on the edge, and you're waiting for this life-saving transplant.
For 2 years while you were on dialysis, were you on a list to be considered for a transplant if a kidney became available? Or were you just in holding?
Yeah. Monica and I went to a meeting, a group of potential donors and recipients at Northwestern. And we went to that meeting in January of 19. And I had already been put on the list at that time. There are a number of ways this works. I mean, anybody can give a kidney. They tell me at Northwestern they have a handful of people who just show up and say, I want to do this. I want to give a kidney.
Really?
And, they don't even have a donor in mind, and that happens once in a while. And I will say that, you have, for those people who don't realize, you have two kidneys. And if you can share your spare, that's great. You can give a kidney to somebody, and you can help protect their life and perhaps save their life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you get on a list. There are different organizations like Gift of Hope that get kidneys from people who are deceased. And then you have your live donor, like my sister, who can come forward, and they're able to do it. And it really is, my sister has had a couple of surgeries since the kidney donation, and one was on a shoulder, one was on a knee, and the other one was donated kidney. And she says, out of all three, donated kidney was the simplest one for her.
Really?
Yeah. And she's doing great, you know. She's got one kidney, her test levels, and her kidney is operating perfectly and all that. I have the other kidney, and it's doing well. 2 years in December.
Let me ask you a question. So you say it's 2 years in December. For anyone listening to us right now who is thinking that they might want to do this, can you explain how do you feel right now? How does your sister feel right now? What I'm going for is, after having done this, if you hadn't done this, if you didn't know, would you know? Do you feel like you used to feel? Does your sister feel like she used to feel?
My sister doesn't even know that she donated a kidney. She doesn't even realize. She says there's no difference. She's just fine. You know, in the rehab from her other two surgeries on joints, you know, it took longer and they were more difficult to recover from and that type of thing. After I got the kidney, they told me to go out and walk the floor at the hospital and just do laps on the floor of the hospital at Northwestern. And then after I walk some more. So I went out, and that's what I was doing, and I got to my sister's room, and I went in there, and she was in bed, and the doctor came in, and she said that she had some pain, and he said, well, that's to be expected. He said, your brother had space, and we just took your kidney and popped it in there. With you, we had to dig your kidney out. So it hurts in the beginning. So her recovery was very, very quick. But in the big beginning, she knew that she had obviously undergone surgery. But really, it wasn't a big deal, and she was up and around in no time. And for me, the process is once you get a kidney, I thought that's it. They give you a kidney, and you by the way, you... Unless your kidneys are badly diseased or something, you keep your old kidneys. So
really?
They don't go anywhere. You keep your old kidneys, and the new one goes in front, like in your lower, in my case, right side, lower right abdomen, because there's space there, and they can tie it in there, and it's very close to the output of the kidney and that type of thing. So your third kidney, your new one, goes down there, and... it's really remarkable. So you wind up with three kidneys in the end, two of which I can't quite do the job, and then the third one that helps. But you're on medication. The medication has side effects to it, and that's something that's tied in. But you know what? All in all, you're not on dialysis anymore, and you're living a more normal life, and you're alive. Which are all good things, I think.
Okay, now, here's the key question. If someone were to come to you today and ask you if you would walk a wing on an airplane during the Aaron Water Show, would you do that?
Twice. Twice. One day with a loop and one day with a loop and a barrel roll.
That's right. So that was the hard thing in your life.
For people who don't know, Ed did this years ago at WGN.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? If somebody came to me today and I was perfectly healthy with two healthy kidneys, most all of us have, and I could meet the criteria, and somebody said, I really need a kidney, and I'm a type A positive and whatever. And you don't have to be a perfect match, because you can do a program in which you donate your kidney, it goes to somebody else who's a match, and then you get a kidney that's matched to you from another person. So you don't have to be a perfect match. They can do it the other way, too. But the thing is, if somebody came to me and said, would you donate a kidney, I don't think I'd think twice about it, knowing now what goes into it and, you know, knowing what my sister did and how the experience was for her. And aside mm-hmm. from everything else, and the fact that you go through some surgery and you get it done, besides everything else, it's just a great feeling to know that you've given life and given a second chance to somebody.
I can't even imagine.
So yeah, it's marvelous. Yeah.
Well, really in fact, I have to ask you, since it's been two years, what have you been getting your sister for Christmas every year? Because I can't even come up with something that would be comparable to a kidney.
Yeah, well, last year it was the Mercedes.
Oh, good. And, good. You did well then. Because it just blows.
This year, she wants a Lambo this year. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to pull that up. it's just, you know what? There are, that's the funny thing. There are no thanks enough. There's just no, you know, what do you get someone who's giving you, you know, part of themselves? It's very hard to pick out something for that person.
Yeah. Well, partly personal. Steve was very ill, and also at Northwestern, when a hepatologist came to us and said, you need to start looking for someone that would be a match for a liver donation. And we were terrified because we thought, what do you mean? It was just so scary. Of course, he was so sick, I don't even think it registered in his head that this was something that we might have to do. And
the short story is that I got lucky, had a wonderful doctor, and with the medication, I never had to go that route, but I was this close to doing that too.
But to this day, I think about the people who stepped up and said, I want to be tested.
Yeah.
And I can't even thank them for offering to be tested. I mean, that blew me away, that is such a generous, I mean, you are helping a person to survive, and that is just mind-blowing to me that you can do that.
Oh yeah, it is amazing, and it is it's pretty cool that you have, in the kidney case, you have two kidneys and you can give one up.
Yeah.
And that's why they say, you share your spare with somebody. But with the liver situation, you're giving a piece of liver to mm-hmm. somebody that then grows in them and keeps them alive. And when I was at Northwestern, it's funny, I'm talking just 6 months ago. There was somebody in the waiting room, and he was on his phone, and he was talking to somebody, and the guy was had a lot of character to him, and I kept saying to myself, "Who is this? Who is this?" And then I realized it was somebody who I recognized, and I think you would too. And it turns out he had had a liver transplant, and I read a little bit more about the story. And again, it was a great success story of somebody who would not be alive today without it. And that's the funny thing too. I go into the transplant center, and I get a medication every month that I've chosen to get. I didn't need to in the beginning, and then I decided I would go this route, which is to drop one medication I was on, and instead get an IV once a month of this other medication. So I go there and I see everybody once a month, and I get this IV, and it takes a half hour, and I'm done with it. But I forget that there are other people in the waiting room at the transplant center at Northwestern who have received not only kidney transplants, but liver transplants, say all your major organs, you know, they do lungs and hearts and everything else. And so it's quite a collection of people.
Ed, I have to tell you, it has been wonderful hanging out with you. And I hope one of these nights we can get you to come on down and hang out in the studio with us.
That would be great. I got to tell you something real quick. I know you're running out of time here, but while we were in the break, I get a text from my sister who donated the kidney. She says, "You sound great with Steve and Johnny. By the way, will you be delivering the Mercedes this week?"
Well, before we let you go, we did get, in fact, we've got a number of wonderful texts from people who say, I am a liver recipient, or my daughter is a kidney recipient. Some great stories. But also a listener says, could you take a moment, please, and explain whether or not there's a cost to the donor to be a donor? Is there a cost?
You know what? Everything's covered by insurance. I mean, there may be some ancillary costs you have here mm-hmm. or there, but no, it's not like out of pocket. You know, I can't pay anything to the donor. The donor doesn't have to pay anything. Everything's handled, and it's a wonderful system. So it's no, it's really great. And even the drugs you're on, which are expensive after you get a transplant, are covered by Medicare and by your own insurance. But thank goodness that happened. And that's something that was put in place a number of years ago. I just have to tell you guys, the National Kidney Foundation of Illinois Walk for Kidneys is coming up June 9th. And I was the MC last year. I'll be the MC this year. And if you go to National Kidney Foundation of Illinois, which is nkfi.org, you'll see you can search for Team Gigi, which is what the grand girls call my wife. Mm-hmm. And this year, a bunch of folks in my family are walking and raising money for the National Kidney Foundation.
Awesome.
So I'll MC again this year on June 9th, and we have a little team my wife has put together. So if you want to go up there and you want to kick in $5, that'd be great.
That's great. Thank
That's
you.
Terrific.
Thanks to Monica, too, because I know this has been... It's been quite a ride for your whole family. Now, in the final 15 seconds, Ed, I have to ask you a completely different question. Do you think cicadas will be out in the month of April, or will it be a May event?
I'm thinking maybe just the very beginning of May. Early May is what
so.
I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Right now I got a thermometer in my the ground outside, eight
uh-huh.
inches deep, and I have 55 degrees currently. So they got to be 64 degrees to come up.
Thank you, Ed. It's been so nice to catch up with you. Thanks for sharing your story, too.
Let's talk again
it's
soon.
It's so nice to talk to you guys.
Appreciate
Thank you
it.
Very much.
We'll take a quick break and come right back on WGN.
Our very first aid, when we're parking in the driving show, when we're sitting in the moonlight row, I bet my penis to a candy bar, you'd be cuter than a movie star. When it's over and we're heading
Steve King and Johnny Putman of WGN Radio. Nobody ever plays that. That's Eddie Cochran, the guy that did Summertime Blues.
Mm-hmm. 1959?
Roughly 1959, yeah. And a great little song called Drive-In Show. And speaking of drive-ins, tis the season when, in spite of the fact that the temperature is going down to 35 in Chicago tonight, it will be getting warmer, and people think about, are there any drive-in movie theaters around that we could hang out at?
And there is one we want to tell you about. We want to introduce you to the owners and operators of the Route 34 Drive-In in Earlville, Illinois. They are the husband and wife, Shelley and Paul Bottomley. Hi, you guys. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good, good. Well, how are you? This was night number two for the drive-in to be open, right?
Yep, we are open right now.
And what are the shows that you're showing?
We are showing Kung Fu Panda 4 as our first feature. Our second feature is Trolls Band Together.
That's great.
Okay.
Now, you were kind of flexible about opening April, May. Was it weather related or just getting everything lined up?
Partially weather. We want to wait until the weather gets a little bit nicer. We look at what's available, what the film companies have to offer for us to play, depending on when movies are going to break. And we have a lot of new staff. We have, I think, three from last year came back, and that's the wife's domain mainly is hiring and training staff. And she has a lot of new people. She wanted to open up with a couple of slow, older features to get going before we get like the fall guys coming up in the first weekend of May.
Oh, great.
And then in the end of May for Memorial Day weekend, we have the Garfield movies going to be coming out. We're hoping we're working on getting arrangements to play that. So
awesome.
We're hoping that'd be pretty busy. So we need to get a little time to get used to before we have, you know, 150 or 200 cars on the lot.
Sure.
Now we understand that
250 cars.
We understand that in addition to this being your opening weekend, this is the 70th anniversary for the theater. Can you tell us a little bit about the history of the theater?
Well, the theater was built in 1953 by Charlie Dias and his two sons, Ronnie and John Dias. They built it in 1953. I think it was his son Ron was the one that was one of the driving forces, and John, his brother. They were encouraging that drive-ins were the way to go. They ran the Lyric Theater, the indoor theater in Earlville, and the boys kind of encouraged them. And back then, there was a company called Ballantyne, which I still run a Ballantyne Real Soundmaster tube amp in there. But they had a thing where you could go on or and get a hold of them, and they would sell you a kit. They'd sell you the stuff you needed for your speakers and your projection equipment and sound equipment, and they would come out and help design the theater for you and help you get it built. I do still have one of the copies of the original blueprint that has a proposed drive-in for Charles W. Dias of Earlville, Illinois.
Wow.
It's printed on the bottom of this blueprint of the theater. And the layout's slightly different than what we actually have here, but it's close enough you can tell what it is.
What made you two decide that you wanted to dive into the drive-in theater business, and what made you decide to do it?
Well, the way I did it is I started out working for a chain organization down in LaSalle, Illinois, the Majestic in LaSalle, as a projectionist and an usher. And I went from there for working for an independent theater in LaSalle as a projectionist. And the operator, Rob Magnoni Sr., that ran the Twin Cinema in LaSalle that I worked for in projection, he knew Charlie Dias, the man that had built this. They were friends, members of an independent theater owners group. And Charlie was looking for a projectionist. He'd lost one. And Ron Magnoni Sr. brought me up here. And I was 16 years old, and I've been out here ever since doing projection and tech support and stuff.
Well,
and
I did that for
several years. And then the Twin Cinema closed, and Ron's son, Ron Magnoni Jr., you know, was out of work because their theater had closed down. And he came out here to work for Charlie Dias as well. And when Charlie passed away, Ron took over and managed it for his widow for a while. Then he ended up buying the theater. And me and Ron have been friends. He was the best man at our wedding.
Hmm.
And we've been real close. I've always helped him out here and stuff. And he passed away from a sudden illness. And it was one of his dying wishes that he wanted us to have this, and he wanted us to take over, and he wanted us to promise we would keep it alive for him. So that's what we're trying to do.
Well, now, is it true that you actually proposed to Shelley there at the drive-in?
So it wasn't at the drive-in. What happened was on one of our dates, he decided that it was time to bring me out to the drive-in. And you know, I just thought it was, you know, meeting some friends and seeing a movie or two. You know, just a normal date. And I remember leaving here, and we were driving back to home. And I remember he looked at me, and he goes, well, he goes, you passed inspection. I just thought, you know, it was just something that he said. And then the next day, we got engaged. I was like, oh, okay.
Wow, Paul, that was really romantic of you.
Well, I'll tell you, me and Ron were really close, and I valued his opinion. And, you know, it's one of these things, and the thing that gets me most about running this now is I always thought this was something that me and him, we did this together.
Uh-huh.
Because his father was the one that helped me get the job with Charlie Dias, and then the theater they ran in LaSalle, they didn't own it. It was leased, and a large chain bought the property. So the person that owned the theater, they were basically pushed out. And his father went and took over a theater that he bought in the Wisconsin Dells area. And Ron loved the theater. He did work at a machine shop for a short while. And Charlie needed help because he was in his 80s getting older. And Ron had got laid off from the machine shop. And I talked him into hiring Ron. And Ron come out here, and he was started in 1986, and, you know, he'd been there ever since. And I always thought, I was kidding him all the time, because I used to mow grass out here for Charlie and do whatever needed to be done. And I told him when I got old enough I could retire, I could come out here and mow the grass for him and do stuff like I did when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was something we'd do together. I'm still adjusting the fact that he's really gone. So.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I see the dancing hot dogs are getting ready in the wings, so we have to take an intermission, but then we'll be back on WGN.
It's intermission time, folks, so hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right over to our refreshment center for the most extravagant array of refreshment goodies ever assembled under one roof. Enjoy breathtaking, mouth-watering goodies, everything from a snack to a delicious full meal. At our refreshment center, you'll find a large variety of goodies to satisfy your hunger, your thirst, or your sweet tooth. So hurry, hurry, hurry. Visit our refreshment center now. The show starts in 5 minutes.
I'm a sucker for the dancing hot dogs and the dancing buns and the dancing popcorn.
About,
and
food is supposed to be not talked about before midnight.
Well, so much for that
I
idea.
I know, really.
We're talking with Shelley and Paul Bottomley. They are the owners of the Route 34 Drive-In in Earlville, Illinois. This is their opening weekend, and they're celebrating their 70th anniversary. I have an odd question. During the height of the pandemic, was that a good or a bad time for your drive-in? Because there's some logic that tells me I would think that during the pandemic, people would have gravitated a little more toward drive-in movie theaters because they're just in their own car and they don't have to encounter a whole lot of other people. Did that impact your attendance at all?
So with the drive-in, obviously there's not a lot left in the state of Illinois. So they didn't, just like every other business, we had rules. And the film companies weren't putting out anything really all that new because nobody was allowed to go to the
right.
theater where the film companies make most of their money. And so Ron was actually able to do pretty well because everybody wanted to get out but not be around a lot of people so they could sit in their cars. So he still had to follow the same rules once the once businesses were allowed to reopen. He, even though it was an outdoor, he still had to follow the rules of only a 50% capacity. So, but he was playing older shows.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, you end up not having to pay quite as much for those movies. So he was actually able to do really, really well with not as many people.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of rules, I just learned something today reading up on drive-ins. And apparently we only have 300 in all of the country.
United States.
Yeah, and like 11 in the state of Illinois. But you do have some very specific rules, and one is a rule that requires you to charge each person an admission to come to the drive-in. Is that correct?
That's up by the film company. Yeah, I have to charge
right.
per admission. And when I enter and set up a what they call a master rental agreement, and you set that up with a film studio, I have different ones for each production company, and you tell them up front what you want to charge for admission for adults, children, seniors, and that's all set in advance. It has to be by per person, and then that also is used by basis what percentage they get, because they get a percentage of the gross ticket sales is how
right.
you do the film company.
So for,
so it makes more sense for you to charge per person than per carload.
Well, if you do a carload, then you need to count how many people are in there, and if the film company, if I say I was going to charge like we charge $10 per person, I have to count how many people are in that car. And if I let them in for a fixed carload, the film company wants whatever percentage they ask for on that film for mm-hmm. what I said, the $10 for each person in that car. So
right.
the carload thing really doesn't work unless you're playing older stuff. If you want to play older vintage things, you can get some of those for a flat rate where you pay the film company so many hundred or $1,000 for the play.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing first run is going to be like that. It's all going to be based on a percentage.
And you mentioned you're going to have The Fall Guy, which will be a first run movie. Is there a point where you have like a line of cars and you have to turn people away? I mean, is that just a wonderful position to be in? Hopefully, yeah.
I've never experienced that in the short time we took over since Ron's passing, but I do remember one of the Shrek movies came out, and as you leave the entrance of the 34, we're on old 34. They rerouted 34 on a bypass around the city where it doesn't go through downtown Earlville anymore, and we're on what's called old 34. But we had cars lined out the gate and to regular Route 34, Ogden Avenue, and lined up heading to the east towards Chicago. And they were all the way out to where the cell phone tower sits along the road. And Ron drove that later on, but that's a mile and a half that was. And
wow.
We ran out of space in here. We had like 300, we hold 300 cars in theory, and we had like 320 in here, and there's no place to park anybody.
Wow.
And he had to have their Oville police had to go down that line and tell people that we can't fit any more people and you'll have to try to come back tomorrow night. This is a Friday opening with the Shrek movies. And so he literally had to turn a mile and a half of cars away.
Wow. A Shrek movie. You know, nothing against Shrek. I just would not have guessed that.
I would have thought that if you were running the Taylor Swift Eras Tour.
Yeah, yeah. But
we didn't run that last year. We were limited and stuff. We had our things playing, but I had other movies. We had the Simpsons movie, had a lot of cars. One of the biggest ones he ever had was the original Twister movie. And so we're kind of excited about the Twisters one coming out because Twister was one where he had like 320 cars and people were wanting to park in the grass by the marquee because they had friends in here. And they said, we'll take our lawn chairs if we can just walk in and sit in the lot. And he let people in that way and they had their cars parked out. And we got a grassy area a couple acres south of the screen by the marquee. They did that, but that was one of the biggest movies he ever had out here as well.
Now, do you do special theme things like around October? Do you do scary movie nights and have people dressed in costumes running through the cars or anything like
well,
that?
Well, our concession people, we're new. Like I said, we just took over last year, like unexpected. Like I said, I always thought that I would be doing this retired with my friend Ron, and after, like I said, he got a sudden illness and passed, and he wanted us to promise him we'd keep this going, so that's why we're here. And thank goodness I got the wife. She's got the business stuff for the business, and I know all the technical stuff and projection and all that, but I've never had to do a payroll or any of that. But so we're kind of new. But we did last year, we did an old Friday the 13th movie, and
Jason.
We did Jason versus Freddy is what we did for our double feature on Halloween weekend. And some of our concession staff, they did dress up, and we decorated inside with Halloween decorations. The girls probably spent 2 or 3 days. They came out here, our concession girls, and decorated things up. So we'll try to do more of that as we get into it.
Now, I understand that depending on what row you're in, you either listen to the old-fashioned outside-the-car speakers or you tune your car FM radio to a specific frequency.
I put speakers on the first 6 rows, and I've got 5 on now because we're slow crowd and I just ran out of time getting things ready. But usually the first 6 rows have speakers on them, and then from row 7 on back, we have just the radio sound. It's 87.9 at broadcast at FM stereo.
Mm-hmm.
And I start from row 2 to 7 where I get the 6 rows. And we don't put speakers on the first row because when they built a new screen, and I think it was 1977 when Charlie Dias ran it, the screen blew down, and they built a newer, bigger screen than what they had. And if you sit in the front row in your car, you can't see the whole picture because it's the size of the screen. So we don't put speakers. A lot of people pull in there and they get out and sit in their lawn chairs because they love that big front row picture.
How big is the screen?
Inside a car, you really can't see it. So,
how big is the screen?
That's 40 feet high by 90 feet across for the picture area. And then the bottom of has a black, what we call skirting. It's black. It's 20 feet high. And that's to block, like, headlights off the highway and stuff like that. So the whole structure is 60 feet tall by 90 feet across.
Wow. Are you sitting, like, in a farmland? I mean, is it just fields around you, or what's around the drive-in?
Yeah, we're in a rural area.
Yeah,
where you
Earlville.
Can see the stars.
Oh, that's a good point. It's another thing you get to enjoy when you're out there. Well, I've been to one drive-in in my life. This is going to be my second trip out to Earlville. I've got to talk to you about concessions and a few questions that our listeners have about going to a drive-in, because for many of us, it's been a long time, if ever. We're talking with the Bottomleys. They are the third owners of the Route 34 drive-in out in Earlville, Illinois. Stay with us here on WGN.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat.
The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to
Steve
the
King
lobby.
And Johnny Putman of WGN Radio. We're talking with Shelley and Paul Bottomley, the owners of the Route 34 drive-in in Earlville, Illinois. This is their opening weekend. They're celebrating their 70th anniversary. The key question I have to ask you both is, for intermissions, do you still show those cartoons?
We play that. That's called the Filmex show clock. The first thing, the clip you're playing at the dancing hot dog, and the next show will start in 5 minutes. And I ran that one on the screen tonight. That's the same one that's in Greece when John Travolta is singing Stranded at the Drive-In in the background. We played that clock this evening for our intermission.
How old are those?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. I have one called the Hungry Dwarf clock that's in black and white. It's old enough. It's got to be from like the 1930s or 40s when drive-ins were first like in their heyday in the early 50s when stuff was black and white.
That's one of the cool things about drive-ins, that you can have those kind of old things that have been there since the dawn of drive-ins, and they're still cool at a drive-in.
They are, and a lot of people love that. There's people when they have the Earlville High School here in town, the small high school, have their class reunion, their alumni dinner, and they will come to the theater here, people that were, like when I was a teenager working out here, they're like I am now, and they come in and they walk through here and they say, you know, this place hasn't changed since I was out here when I was 16. And they love that, the vintage look and stuff we keep.
What was the admission 70 years ago when one would go to the drive-in?
Oh, I believe it was 35 cents.
Wow. And now
I have the opening night ad somewhere on the wall here in the concession stand. I would have to go look at it, but I believe it was 35 cents. And children 12 and under were free back then.
Is it 10 bucks for adults now?
Yeah.
Okay.
And children 5 through 12 are $8.
Okay.
And senior citizens 65 and older are $8. And age 4 and under are free.
Okay. A couple questions from our audience. Number one, you mentioned that you have some speakers, but otherwise one would listen on their FM 87.9, right?
Yes.
So a listener says, well, what happens if my radio's not working and I get there and I think I'm going to get a speaker, but there's no speaker available, so now I have to listen to the radio. Can you bring a portable radio? Can you actually listen
on
a portable? Okay.
Yes, a portable radio. It doesn't have to be a car radio. A lot of people bring like these big radios, you know, like Milwaukee Tools and stuff, make these ones that will charge your drill battery for construction people and stuff.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of people bring those big radios so they'll run off the batteries, and they bring them out, and they don't use their car radio. Because we have a large crowd. Like when it gets warm, like when Barbie's playing last summer, I would say most of the people are sitting outside. They back like their minivan in, and they'll set like blankets down, and the kids will bed down there, and the parents will put their lawn chairs out and stuff, and they'll have a portable radio out to listen to the sound and stuff. And I mean, when it's warm and nice, most of the people are outside. And honestly, when you walk around the lot, there's enough people playing their radios loud enough. You can hear even when there isn't a speaker available. A lot of times.
I have to share an inaugural drive-in story with you. I went to the drive-in for years as I was growing up. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, used to go to the Halstead drive-in at 138th and Halstead. But when Johnny and I got married, she had never been to a drive-in movie. So I wanted to take her to a drive-in movie, and we wound up going to the theater that was closing. It was their last weekend that the Edens.
Drive-in.
Was it the Edens Drive-in? I thought it was up in Palwaukee. It was up in that area. Anyhow, but it was possibly the worst movie you could ever see at a drive-in. If you remember the movie Seven, which was such a dark movie, and we didn't think of that before we got to the
theater. It was scary, too.
It was scary and dark and hard to see.
Yeah, and it was the last night, and they didn't really care. And ironically, when I was born, I was literally put between two projectors because my dad was a projectionist at a chain of theaters in Tennessee. So as a baby, I would be put in a bassinet between two projectors, and my dad would say, "You know, you've seen the Ten Commandments like 103 times because you were there when we played the Ten Commandments. You know when there's a real change." But I had never experienced the whole drive-in phenomena because it just wasn't readily available to me. So if you want to head out to Earlville, let's say you're coming from let's say downtown Chicago, is it like an hour and a half drive out to your place in Earlville?
I believe about that. Mm-hmm. We're on Route 34, which when you get into Chicago is called Ogden Avenue.
Yeah.
And we're about 15 to 20 minutes farther west of Sandwich, if you know how long it gets to Sandwich. We're about 15 or 20 minutes to the west.
Yeah.
Well, for people coming the other direction, we're about 5 miles from I-39 in Mendota on 34.
Oh, that's excellent. And we're going to be out there.
People coming down from the north, there's a Mendota Earlville exit, I-39, and we're about 5 miles east of I-39.
Okay, well, the listener says, what if you make a plan to bring the family, come out to a movie, and on your way out there, it starts raining? Do we turn around and go back home, or do you guys still show the movies?
No, we play Rain or Shine.
You do?
We play Rain or Shine. My friend Ron used to always say in that movie Twister, there's a scene in the original movie Twister from 86 where a storm is coming in, mm-hmm. and they're at the drive-in theater, and the picture stays on the screen until the tornado blows the screen down. Ron used to always tell me that was going to be us, because when we ran film in Carbon Arts, I was always as projectionist. He always told people, when they asked him if it was going to rain, you ever see the movie Twister? The tornado's going to come. Where do you keep that picture on the screen until the tornado takes it down? So we do play, and my son would understand the same thing you're talking about, because me being a projectionist out here, I would bring him out and put a blanket and a pillow underneath the desk of the projection room. And when he got tired, he would crawl under there and go to sleep while I was running the movies.
Now, am I correct that now what you're running is all digital and very little film?
Yeah, I ran film once last year and once this spring, just me playing around with it on the screen when nobody's out here during the week. We got some reels and a few features out here, but all the content now comes in digital format, and it comes on a hard disk drive that gets loaded to the server, and you set up a playlist and click the mouse, and everything takes care of itself.
Wow.
And it's good because the picture is a lot brighter. We have we went from carbon arc rods, which weren't that bright, to a 4,500-watt Xeon. Now we're 6,500 watts. And the dark pictures, back in the day when it was on film, they had special drive-in prints that were available for certain movies that the picture was actually brighter than the indoor print to help that, where you couldn't see it.
Apparently, they didn't have the drive-in version of Seven when we saw
Seven,
it, because it was just a black screen. And I thought, that looked a little bit like Brad Pitt, but I'm not sure. And a head in a box. I remember seeing that, too. A listener also wanted to know, if you do turn on your radio and you're sitting in your car, do you run the risk of your battery dying? And what happens if you have somebody with their battery? Are you able to jump them before the theater closes?
So that actually happens often.
Yeah.
And we actually have a battery pack here. It will jump several cars. Just in the off chance that somebody's battery is going bad and running the radio runs it down too much.
Okay, see?
Yeah.
Just when you think we've asked all the questions. I've got to ask, though, because you mentioned that you've hired people to work the concession. The concession must be pretty busy throughout the show.
Is pizza the biggest seller?
Our pepperoni pizza actually sold the most last year by double of all the pizzas. But we do have a rather robust menu available from burgers and hot dogs, pork tenderloins. We introduced a chicken sandwich, which is a breaded chicken breast. We have baskets for chicken tenders, shrimp basket, fish basket, of course, the nachos, onion rings, funnel cakes, pretzels, and, of course, our popcorn and candy and the sodas. Mm-hmm.
Do you realize how hungry we are right now?
The Green River soda, that's a big hit, too.
Really?
Green River is one of our top sodas.
So it's the whole nostalgia thing, too. Once you get to the drive-in, you have a Green River and a hot dog with no ketchup, right?
Yep.
So go to the website. People can get an update. And if I'm not mistaken, this is truly a family affair because your son takes care of the website, right?
So our youngest son takes care of the website for us, yes.
And
I take care of the Facebook pages,
mm-hmm.
And make sure that our youngest went on a bad day. He's mine, and but he is our tech support for a lot of different things.
And it's a really good looking website. It's 34drivein.com. The number 3, the number 4, then drivein.com. It's a really well done website.
It is.
I will let him know.
Yeah.
The funny thing was is that Paul and I were kind of sitting together and trying to figure out how to do the website, and he walked in and he saw what we had on the computer and he goes, "What are you doing?" He is a computer programmer, so he actually writes software. I guess you couldn't ask for anything better.
Yeah,
to run the website. So he went through and he's like, "Well, we got to make sure that it's secure. We got to make sure that it's safe. We got to make sure that viruses aren't going to get here or minimize, because that's issues that people who are going to look online."
Mm-hmm.
Those are things that people are concerned with, or should be, in this day and age.
Sure.
So he definitely thought about all of that. We are working on a coming attractions page so that we can kind of list out the shows that we're hoping to play throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
This year we added on the concession stand page so you can actually see what we offer. We also have our policies and our rules.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Because then, this way it keeps everybody safe and everybody can enjoy the drive-in.
Right.
And your FAQ page really covers just about everything.
Everything you would ever want to know. And if people want to just be sure of the movie that's showing on a given Friday or Saturday night, do you recommend that they call the number for the drive-in?
So with that, if they're looking for the current weekend, they can call. They can also look at our Facebook page, or they can look at the website. As far as, if they're looking farther in advance, sometimes before we say that we're going to play something, we want commitment that we're going to be able to get the print.
Got it. Yeah. Understood.
So we may say, well, we're hoping, and that means that, we're still waiting back from the film companies to hear if we're going to be able to play it.
Well, what's the 815 number that we should give our audience?
For the drive-in?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It'd be 815-246-9700.
Okay, we have that linked on our page as well as links directly to your Facebook page. And again, we love the nostalgia with the original logo for Route 34. And I just love the fact that you guys are doing this and it's a family affair. And Paul, you obviously have this in your blood that you were meant to do this. You were destined from the time you were a boy. So it's really cool that this
I did since I was a teenager, and it's more years than I don't really want to admit how long that is. And the family affair, my oldest son, he's out here right now, and I got a hold of him because the show was getting over like about 10 after 11. I told him we have to do this radio thing, and I need somebody that knows what switches to flip to turn on the floodlights on the lot. And go. I think he may have to go out and jumpstart somebody and get somebody going. So he did have to go handle that, and I needed somebody who could fill in while we're here on the radio.
Well, thanks a million for joining us tonight, and let's check back every now and then through the summer and just find out what's going on with you guys, and we're going to come out and see you, too, on some Sunday night out there at the Route 34 drive-in. Thank you both so much for what you're doing, and thanks for joining
us. Thanks a bunch, kids.
Bye-bye now.
We'll take a break. More coming up at WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. It will come as no surprise to anyone that the conversation during that commercial break was all about food.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. We were reminiscing with our engineer, Adam Phillips, about the night that Superdog showed up with the...
Yeah, Maury and Flory from Superdog.
Yes, and, they had coolers filled with hot dogs and milkshakes and french fries.
That was when Fran Tate was in the studio with us.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. It was so good.
But, oh, boy.
You know what? I think of nostalgia, and I think about, like, a super dog, because that's what they're all about, too.
Sure.
Just taking you back to where you pull up, and you have your food delivered to you in the car.
Wasn't Superdog just picked as one of the best places, in the country, places you have to see?
Yes. Well, it's on the list of the 100 places you have to visit before you die.
Right.
But this was a list of restaurants, and it made the cut as one of the finest restaurants in the country that you should try. And I know it's debatable. I know we'll hear from people that say, yes, but you've never had. We probably have. We're just saying that this is our favorite.
Yeah.
So, and if one walked in right now, we would just jump on it.
We're going to check in with our friend Tom Appel. He is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. And every time Tom is on with us, excuse me, we play a little of Tom's tunes. These are songs that Tom uses to test out the sound systems for some of the cars that he's testing.
And he was over the moon this past week because
there's a new Mark Knopfler album that just came out.
And it's everything he had hoped it would be. It was wonderful, and he was driving a vehicle that had a great sound system. So he said, I got to share this music with you guys. So we'll get a taste of that new CD from Tom.
Yeah.
And a lot of car talk, too. And your questions, if you have questions about cars, 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. And if Tom touches on something and you want a clarification, whatever, you can text us throughout the show.
And we should mention, too, that coming up next week, we're going to be talking with Marshall Chess, who is the son of Chess Records co-founder Leonard Chess. And because we're getting ready for the Great Illinois Cicada Invasion of 2024.
Excuse me, that's called Cicada-geddon. You heard of Armageddon? This is Cicada-geddon.
We're going to be talking with Mark Hurley, who is a Cicada-geddon expert? Is that his technical title?
He is an expert on cicadas. So that's coming up on WGN.
Better than the usual thing you got. Stay just ahead of the game. Ahead of the game.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I love this stuff. This is one of Tom's tunes. Tom, being the man who is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, his last name would be Appel, and he joins us right now. And the Tom's Tunes theme for tonight is what, Tom?
It is brand new Mark Knopfler. This is like a national holiday, global holiday. I can't be more excited about music than new Mark Knopfler stuff. And this is his 10th studio album. It's called One Deep River, 12 tracks, came out last week, and it does not disappoint. It's, if you like to hear Mark play, that's great. If you love Mark lyrics, it's great. This is a wonderful new album.
I was really happy to hear that he sings on this CD, yeah. And he sounds like Mark Knopfler, because he has had some health problems, and it was really scary there for a while, but it looks like he's come back with guns blazing. It's very cool.
Yeah, he sounds great.
And Tom was so excited. What was it? As it was getting to close to midnight when the album was going to be... I mean, you were more excited about this than Taylor Swift.
I don't know if you know about how this works, how many people know about how this works, but you were able to pre-purchase the album. And the three cuts that were out there, the promo singles were out there, and I watched my phone and waited for it to fill in.
Oh, my gosh.
And sure enough, at midnight, the other nine songs appeared on my phone. I was so happy.
Oh, golly. So this sounds good or great in the vehicles that you've been road testing?
Well, I've been extraordinarily lucky. I'm driving the new Lincoln Nautilus, which is Lincoln's mid-size two-row crossover, and I'm driving a high-end version of it that comes with Revel Audio, R-E-V-E-L, and it is considered one of the best audio systems available in a car these days. So the convergence of a new Knopfler album and me driving a vehicle with Revel Audio, this is spectacularly good fortune for me.
Yeah, you're driving the garbage out of the garbage can. You're driving the dog for a walk. The dog didn't need to walk. Tom drove the dog.
Tom drives from the living room to the kitchen. We're going to do something a little different with the Nautilus, because Tom told us he was going to be talking about the Nautilus. This is the 2024 Lincoln Nautilus. And we thought, well, let's do something a little different with this, because the Nautilus is the latest incarnation of what started out back in 2007 as the Lincoln MKX. And we happen to have a 2007 Lincoln MKX that we keep down here. We didn't buy it new. We bought it used. And it's been a great vehicle, and we thought, well, it might be kind of interesting to do a little comparison.
To see how it's changed.
Between how things have changed. And one of the first things I noticed, Tom, now the price, the sticker price for the Lincoln Nautilus that you're driving is what?
$69,100 all in.
Wow.
Okay, and I did a check, and the starting MSRP for the vehicle you're driving is $54,750.
Yeah.
Which is roughly $20,000 higher than the starting MSRP of the 2007 Lincoln MKX. So in 17 years, the price has jumped $20,000.
You've got this great sound system. I mean, our sound system is not bad, but it's not a Revel sound system, Steve.
But I did some comparison with a lot of different things. The size of the vehicles is surprisingly similar.
Yeah, it's comparable. The horsepower is different. We have a little bit more horsepower on the 2007 MKX.
Yeah, we have on the 2007, we have 265 horsepower, and I believe the horsepower on yours is, 250?
It is 250 on some. This one is the hybrid. This one's 310.
Okay.
So yeah, this is that thing, too, where with hybrid vehicles these days. Hybrid not only gets you more fuel economy, but it tends to be the premium drivetrain. So you pick up horsepower along the way as well.
Well, and with ours, when they started out, the Lincoln MKX was front-wheel drive. Now, your Nautilus is all-wheel drive, right?
Yes, the Nautilus only comes with all-wheel drive for 2024.
And originally, the production, and this is one of the big things, and I've seen this talked about a lot on some of the Lincoln groups on Facebook and some other places. Initially, Lincoln was manufacturing these vehicles in Canada. Now, the Nautilus is being manufactured in China, correct?
Yes, it's a very interesting story, but they expect reduced volume, and the companion vehicle at Ford, the Edge, is going away. So manufacturing here might be difficult because it just won't have the volume to support it. So we're actually getting what is the global version of this vehicle now.
The global version means it's slightly different than it would be if it was made in the States?
Yeah, Lincoln is one of those companies that I think it does better business in China than it does in the U.S. And Chinese aesthetic, slightly different. So when you look in this vehicle compared to other Lincolns, it's not exactly the same. There are things about the touchscreen and other things. And I want to talk about the touchscreen later if we have a moment. Mm-hmm. But the design, too, it's a little bit more fluid and a little less linear. And that's really a function of Chinese market demand than U.S., but it actually comes off very well. This is a classy vehicle.
So this is a popular vehicle in China?
Relatively popular. Lincoln has done better in China in the last couple of years.
Hmm. All right. We're talking with Tom Appel. We're talking cars. Tom joins us a couple times a month to talk about cars, and we'll get you up to date on what's happening with his podcast, because it is a very highly respected podcast, as it should be. And we got a lot more ground to cover with him right here on WGN.
They'll all be in the air when I'm up here on the band. What it is, I'm juggling here. I've only got two birds in the air.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide, is joining us, and we're digging some of Tom's tunes, and tonight we're featuring the new Mark Knopfler album, One Deep River. And which track is this, Tom?
That is track one, called Two Pairs of Hands. Nice way to start an album off. Really great groove.
And one of the things that I love about Mark Knopfler, he is one of those guitar players that you hear the tone,
mm-hmm.
you know, no, it's Mark
him.
Knopfler.
Yeah.
He's able to just, it's just the way he dials it in. He's so good.
It's the way he plays, too. It's, Tom Appel, we were talking about you off the air because I said to Steve, this is like a twofer for Tom. Not only are we talking about cars, but we're playing his favorite music on the radio.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a total scam. I was hoping you guys wouldn't figure that out.
Uh-huh. Tom is also the guy behind the Car Stuff podcast, which was named one of the top 10 best automotive podcasts of 2024, also an award winner last year. And this new Lincoln is one of the things that you do review this week. What's the mileage on the Lincoln?
Right now, this is the hybrid, and I'm getting about 31 miles per gallon, which is its EPA city or combined estimate, 30. So I'm hitting the EPA numbers, and I'm surprised how easily I'm hitting them, because I'm not trying. The power is good. The power delivery is incredibly smooth, very shift, just a very, very refined drivetrain. It's not sporty. It's just very polished, and I think that's exactly in the Lincoln wheelhouse.
And very quiet, too, right?
It's very quiet. It's amazingly quiet. Yeah, and this might be one of the quietest cars I've driven maybe ever.
Now, we're doing a little bit of a comparison just because the Lincoln MKX, the 2007 Lincoln MKX, is where this started for Lincoln.
Right.
The names have changed. The size has basically stayed the same. It's that kind of vehicle. Now, ours was initially based off the Ford F-150 pickup, so ours drives a little more truck-like, and we're fine with that. The Nautilus now is a much more refined vehicle. And, Tom, would you agree, along with the smoother powertrain, that one of the most significant changes has been the increase in the use of technology in this vehicle?
This vehicle is over-the-top tech, and that might sound like a bad thing, but I can't believe how well Lincoln has integrated interesting tech into this, and one of them is the absolutely over the top, but the oh my gosh, the outcome is so good. The 48-inch pillar to pillar screen that is in front of you in the front row, it's absolutely incredible, because it begins with the instrument panel behind the steering wheel, and then it goes all the way to the other pillar, and you can program, you can select what three of the windows in that screen do. The screen itself is about 5 inches high. It's 48 inches across. It's entirely one contiguous strip. So you have the instrument panel, and then you have a map. and then you have three other cells or boxes that you can fill in, and they're super easy to select. And I chose music, trip computer, and a big clock, and you can move them around. It's easy, it's configurable, and the effect is really good. It's not distracting at all.
And let me hold you on this for a second. Is this kind of where the automotive industry is going? And the first time that Johnny and I experienced this was about 2 years ago when we were road testing different vehicles. And we were testing a Jeep Grand Cherokee. It was the, I think it was the E version. And the dashboard in front of you, from the driver's side to the passenger side, you had different things that you could program.
Including the passenger could be watching something on their part of the screen.
Right.
Right.
But my question is that kind of the way the automotive industry is going, where we're just going to have, instead of a dashboard in front of the driver, and then just the dashboard with gauges in front of the driver and just a padded dashboard in front of the passenger, now you're going to have a configurable dashboard across the width of the car.
I think that is where we're going. And you mentioned the Jeep system. That's also in the Grand Wagoneer and Wagoneer. And this is an evolution of that, I think. I think this is a little bit more advanced to that. But that was the beginning. And part of what Jeep was selling at the time, too, was access to something called, was it Amazon Fire? I think, which was a service for movies. And so a passenger in the front row could watch a movie on the dashboard if they wanted to, or TV or whatever it was that they subscribed to.
But when you're driving at night and you've got your map and your music and your clock, that's a lot of light there. Is that not a little bit distracting when you've got all that light coming at you when you're driving on, you know, dark roads at night?
Particularly with the headlights of the cars coming toward you, also adding to the glare in front of you.
I'm glad you asked me that, because I was goofing around with that last night. I tend to drive to the health club late at night, and I take a very rural route so I can put miles on test cars. And I was playing with that on an unlit rural road, and you can dim it sufficiently so that it is not a distraction. And I shouldn't say that you can select to do that. The system was automatically dimming it so it was not a distraction for me.
Wow.
Actually, I was surprised by how effective the light was. Also, there is an area of about 2 inches of contiguous black strip before you get to the windshield, which helps to sort of break up the light. But it is exactly the right height not to be a distraction for me.
Okay, well, that's good to hear, because in my mind, I'm looking at Steve like I'm squinting like, ew, I'm afraid that would really bother me after a while. But if it dims, that's a different story. The color that you're driving, we're looking at a color picture. Are you in this incredible-looking red thing?
I am not. I'm driving a car that is lustrous gray, and it's a gray color.
Not just gray, but lustrous gray.
There is probably a book to be written about all the color names that manufacturers are coming up for gray and silver. Atomic silver, nuclear silver, power gray. And they're all just these kind of muted tones. This car does have a really nice finish, and it's got a nice luminescence to it. It's a $750 option, so I don't know that I would run with it, but it looks good.
I used to have a 2006 Chevy Impala, and I couldn't tell if it was gray or silver, because it was shiny enough to be silver, but then also on a cloudy day, it would look like just a plain gray.
Yeah.
So it was kind of hard for me to tell. So I totally get it that, there'd be so many colors. So it's kind of hard to tell what's gray and what's silver now in cars these days.
They never call it like murky or, dismal
or dull
or stormy. Didn't I see that you were road testing a vehicle or wrote about a vehicle that was in 8-ball black?
8-ball black. Yeah, that is the
love that.
Dodge Hornet. Yeah.
Yeah, because again, you think
better to have a big white spot on the roof.
It should, but it does not.
I thought that was a great name for a color, because there's just so many black, but 8-ball black, everybody knows that that's a deep, shiny, cool color.
Yeah, that is a good name. Very evocative.
Sit tight, Tom. We'll come right back.
Or hang loose, whatever.
With Tom and Tom's tunes from the brand new Mark Knopfler CD. And we'll be right back here on WGN.
Both hands twice, and we both get paid. Scavengers, you're
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. And tonight's Tom's Tunes, we're featuring One Deep River, the new Mark Knopfler album. And Tom, as we're playing this track, I'm thinking of you driving down this lonely road at night, and with that track playing, I'd be scared.
I would just be pounding the steering wheel. This is such a good cut. It's such good music. I'm so happy Mark Knopfler cut a new album.
What is that particular cut?
It's called Scavenger's Yard, and it is track 4 on the album.
Mm, okay. Did you ever hear the story about pounding on the steering wheel? Our newsman, Dick Sutton?
No.
True story.
Yes, and he got to tell Waylon Jennings, because Waylon Jennings was in studio with us, and he said, I've got to share a story with you. He was driving down the expressway, and he loved his music, especially country music, and Good Hearted Woman came on, and he turned it up to the threshold of pain, and he started pounding the beat on his steering wheel, and it came off in his hands.
The steering wheel literally broke.
That's bad.
And Waylon cracked up at that.
And Dick said, no, really, Waylon, it came off in my hands. And I guess he pushed it back into the neck and was able to pull over to the side of the road, and he's holding the steering wheel.
And then, didn't he say he had to drive home, but somehow he was pushing it into the center of the wheel hub.
Just the image of that. And somebody blows their horn at you, and you just lift the steering wheel up and shake it at them, you know? Okay.
Believe it or not, we are talking about cars. You can go to consumerguide.com, and you should do that and check out all the latest goodies at Consumer Guide. I want to stay with the car we've been talking about for a second and then move on to a couple other things. We're talking about Tom has been testing the 2024 Lincoln Nautilus, and we're talking about the names of different things, like the names of colors and some other things. I was just looking through, because Tom sent us a copy of the Monroney sticker, and I see that you have a heated visor blade, but I'm curious about a couple other things you have here.
Okay.
I'm just reading from the sticker. What the heck is Lincoln Embrace?
Lincoln Embrace. I pay them for that too?
I believe that is part of the interior ambience system, and there's a lot going on there, including the ability to add scents to your interior.
What?
Speaking of that, one of the other things I notice, and this comes underneath the auto air refresh, auto dimming review mirror, digital scent.
No.
What the heck does digital smell like?
I am holding in my hand right now a sample. I'm opening it up, and sometimes my office smells like it when I'm feeling crazy. Mystic Forest, and that is one of the several scents that you can make your Lincoln smell like.
What?
Why?
No.
Why would you want to do this?
You know, I got to have a little tree hanging from my rear view mirror if it's going to smell like a forest. No.
Then the other thing I'm curious about, says here you have the seats, the perfect position, power, 24-way active seats with active motion. Now, I want to hold you on this for a second, because a couple years ago we were testing some vehicles, and we were testing another Lincoln vehicle that we're thinking very seriously about. It was the Lincoln Aviator, but it had the 30-way adjustable seats. We tried, I want to say, about 4 different Aviators. We could never get comfortable in those 30-way power seats.
That's so too much.
So how comfortable are these 24-way adjustable seats in the Nautilus?
I did pretty good. Funny story about these seats, actually, is that the memory on them is set. And there is a journalist that has been on your show, Jill Simonillo, who's something like 3'2" or something.
Right.
And she had programmed the seats in advance, and I got into the car, and the car tried to kill me.
when that happens.
And it kept closing and closing on me, and I kept hitting the memory button. But it turned out I had memory key 2, not memory key 1, so I was hitting the wrong button. So I finally had to just reach down and move the seat back, and that stopped the forward motion. But it was scary. It was a little bit like watching Batman, when Batman and Robin were tied up and something was about, awful was about to happen to them. Yes. This was like that. I was slowly going to be crushed by the steering wheel.
Oh, that's like that scene, and there was an early, early Batman movie that they ran on TCM. It was a Batman serial, and Batman and Robin are in this room, and the walls are closing in on them.
Yes.
This was like that.
Tom was slowly going closer and closer to having a steering wheel in his chest.
Okay, so back just before we move on to some other cars. So now, this is made in China. What is Lincoln's ultimate thought? Because, you know, it's kind of not a bad thing if you're making cars in this country.
And let me just say, as an aside, we're getting texts from people that are saying, oh, I didn't know that. I don't like that.
Yeah.
And I think Lincoln has to overcome that, because people are going, I can, as one listener says, if I can get an Acura made in Ohio and a Lincoln made in China, you better believe I'm going with an Acura made in Ohio.
Because point of origin is a factor in sales. So what is Lincoln / Ford's thought on this for the future?
Yeah, obviously, if you're politically motivated with your automotive purchase, you're not going to want to buy this car. It is, in fact, built in China, and some of that money does go to China. But it is built by Ford, by Lincoln, in China. What's happening is that Ford is discontinuing the Ford Edge, and the Ford Edge and the Lincoln Nautilus used to come down the same assembly line in the U.S., but they're not going to have the volume just to build a Nautilus here. So they build a Nautilus in China as well, so they're bringing in the Chinese models. Now, Ford is paying a lot. They're paying a tariff, 27.5%, to bring these in. So they're only selling high-end versions of it. That's part of the reason the price went up, because they have to cover that. But the thing is, they need a car in this segment. Lincoln only sells 4 vehicles right now, the Corsair, the Nautilus, the Aviator, and the Navigator. They can't lose one of them, so they needed something to fill that spot. I suspect that the next generation of the Nautilus will probably be built in the United States, but worth noting that the Buick Envision, which is Buick's compact crossover, also built in China, that is currently the most reliable vehicle General Motors sells in the U.S.
Really?
So if you're worried, if you're worried about quality, that's not an issue. If you have issues with the politics, obviously that can't be fixed.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, if you do have issues for whatever your patriotic concerns are, would Tesla be the only vehicle that's truly made in America?
Tesla's I think it's the Y and the 3, so the small crossover and the small sedan, are the most American vehicles you can buy in the U.S., I believe, according to Cars.com. So that includes a bunch of things like sourcing labor and parts and things like that. And obviously it gets difficult when you get down to sub-assemblies and parts of parts, but but most cars built in the U.S. are very much built in the U.S., and Toyota products, for example, built in the U.S., have very high domestic content.
And we have Honda, not very far from here in Alabama.
Right.
There are a number of Hondas that are made, as well as
Hyundai.
Volkswagens in Tennessee,
right.
And then the listener mentioned Acura in Ohio.
Genesis just opened up a new plant, I believe, in Montgomery, Alabama, I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
Yeah, and that Volkswagen plant looks like it's going union. The vote was held yesterday.
Big deal.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens with that. They have to approve a contract, and that can be sticky.
Because that was Volkswagen in Tennessee, and the next is Mercedes gets to vote, and Mercedes is in Alabama?
Am I wrong, Tom? Isn't Volkswagen the first and possibly only union auto manufacturing plant in Tennessee?
Oh, I don't know. Is it the only one in Tennessee? It might be. There's a whole network of factories down that way that share suppliers that are all kind of tied together by interstates. Yeah. But they might be the only one in Tennessee.
We're going to take a quick break and then come back with more with Tom Appel. Stay with us on WGN.
Dungeon doors, the shutters and the queues. Everybody's looking for somebody's arms to fall into. That's what it is. That's what it is now.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We're talking with Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and tonight featuring the music of Mark Knopfler. And Tom, that is not from Mark Knopfler's latest album, is it?
No, that one goes back 25 years. That is off the album Sailing to Philadelphia, and that's the opening cut called What It Is. And I like that song so much because it almost feels like a spiritual sequel to Sultans of Swing. It's got a great sound.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, as I was listening in my headphones, I thought, well, geez, this is Dire Straits.
Yeah.
And it was Dire Straits from 25 years ago.
Yeah.
The blatant plug light just went on. And Tom, people should go to Consumer Guide and check out your podcast. And what else should you point them toward?
Yeah, check us out at consumerguide.com. If you are looking for a new car or truck, you want to check out our best buy list. That's right there. And this week we talked to the vice president for product technology and the senior manager for tire development at Goodyear about EV tires. So if you've had any questions about why electric vehicle tires are different, these guys know, and it's a great conversation.
Now, I want to segue because we were talking a little bit about Tesla before we broke.
Yeah.
And we always do a little bit of an update on recalls. And sadly, I guess there is a huge Tesla recall. What's the latest with this?
This is a weird recall. And I don't know if this is the first or one of the few, but this is a recall that Tesla's actually going to have to execute and cannot handle over the air. The Cybertruck, the brand new Cybertruck, only been out for a couple of weeks, and they've only got a few thousand of them out there, being recalled because the gas pedal cover, it's not a gas pedal, I guess the throttle cover, the pedal cover, is snapping off of the actual unit that it's based on and sliding forward and locking in place.
Oh,
so it's a comedy of errors, but you can end up in a full throttle situation where the pedal will not come back up. So
even if you hit the brake,
The brake will slow it down. But when you lift off
if
on the brake,
stuck,
this
stuck.
Is this is actually complicated. When you lift off on the brake, it sometimes the throttle resumes. So it is a dangerous situation.
No, thank you.
Well, I'm sorry, but the truck should be taken off the roads because it's just so ugly.
And please tell me you don't have to wait 2 months for the recall order to come in the mail.
We don't know when that is yet.
Oh,
they're going to have to do something soon. I don't think the actual recall has been executed yet. We know it's going to happen, and it's going to have to happen because it's a serious safety issue.
Well,
so there's no way they're going to.
Yeah. And isn't it like 3,000 or 4,000 of the vehicles have been sold, so they're out there on the streets?
Yeah, so every one of them has got to go back in, and they should be parked. And I haven't seen that order yet, but don't drive them.
Okay.
Wow. I just read here that NHTSA wrote in their recall document, an unapproved change introduced lubricant or soap to aid in the component assembly of the pad onto the accelerator pedal. Residual lubricant reduced the retention of the pad to the pedal. That sounds like just a really dumb move was made to cause
it actually sounds like they couldn't get the pedal cover on there, so they just went and grabbed some dish soap.
And soaked it up, yeah.
Oh, boy.
That's crazy.
Okay.
But it's still ugly.
In other happy thoughts, what other recalls should we know about?
There is an interesting one, and it's not dangerous exactly, but a lot of vehicles, 450,000 different Fords, and I believe it's the Escape and the Maverick. No, I'm sorry, the Bronco Sport, which is the smaller Bronco, and the Ford Maverick, which is based on that, and they're being recalled for something I don't fully appreciate the significance of, but onboard battery sensors are not determining when the onboard 12-volt battery is going low, is depleted or running poorly or just, getting close to dead. And the result is that the stop-start system is still working, fully killing the battery. So that needs to be recalled. And I guess it's a pretty simple fix. But long story short, the stop-start system, the engine stop-start system, should stop working if the system determines that the battery is not in a good state of charge. And that's not happening.
Wow. We've run up against the clock. Can we keep you for one more segment?
Oh, sure.
Oh, it's an excuse to play more Mark Knopfler. How's that?
Yeah, that works.
Tom Appel is our guest, and he is the guy who joins us twice a month, and he's the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, and we've got a little bit more ground to cover with Tom and a couple more questions from listeners, so stay with us.
Check out consumerguide.com and check out their podcast, and you can text or call us at 312-981-7200. Stay with us at WGN.
Inside, but you don't see too many faces.
Steve King and Johnny Putnam, WGN Radio.
Ooh, that's good stuff.
Yeah, that is. So we're talking with Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide, and we've been featuring some Mark Knopfler stuff from his new album, but we had to go back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that song, Sultans of Swing by Dire Straits, it's on my very, very short list of songs I have never, ever, ever gotten tired of hearing.
Yes.
Will never get tired of hearing.
Okay, what year do you think it was recorded? What year do you think it came out?
Oh, okay, let me think.
No cheating, Tom. I want to guess from you, too.
I'm thinking, wasn't that 78-ish?
What do you think, Tom?
Oh, I know it was 78. I love that album so much.
Yes. Can you believe that? I mean, 46 years ago?
That was just one of those from the very first time I heard it to right now.
Yeah.
I love that song.
Wow. Tom Appel is with us for another segment.
We need to do maybe a segment sometime on what songs have you never, ever
gotten tired
and will you never get tired? I would put Sultans of Swing. I would put Breathless, Jerry Lee Lewis.
I would put anything by Chris Isaak.
Well, some things by Chris
Isaak. Oh, please. Tom, first thing comes to your mind.
Paul Simon's Late in the Evening.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's just such a great tune.
Hmm.
Becca, a song you will never, ever, ever get tired of.
We're all going,
There are the epic Rolling Stones songs, too.
Yeah.
Like Honky Tonk Woman.
Yeah. I agree with you on that one. Okay,
that could be in continuous loop behind me all the time.
The controls in the studio with us here in Florida.
Top of my head, I can think of would be the song Maine by Noah Kahan, which was from an older EP of his. He's a newer.
10 years ago?
No, not quite that old. He's a new.
Not quite that old. Come here.
Okay, hey.
I'll give you not quite that old.
We're talking 47 years, and you're going 10 years.
I'm just
not
saying
that old.
The only point I'm trying to make is that he's a newer artist.
Yes.
That's all I'm trying to say.
Do you want to get any older?
What? Do you want to get any older?
I mean, it'll happen one way or another.
Caleb, a song you never, ever, ever have gotten tired of and never ever will.
Okay. Who's that?
I'm going to go with Band on the Run by Wings.
Really?
Because
that's a good one.
It changes like genres at least three times over the track.
Okay.
So there's always like variety.
All right.
That's interesting. I'll have to listen to that differently because being in FM radio, those things were played over and over, and sometimes you hear them, you go, oh, it's 20 minutes after the hour, and I've got a commercial break coming up. You know, it just brings it all back to you.
Julian, what about you? Song you have never, ever gotten tired of?
Oh, easy. The End by The Doors.
Really?
Huh. Interesting choice.
Julian, he's an old soul. There's an old man, you know, trotting around in there.
And behind the console at WGN, Adam Phillips. Adam, a song you've never, ever gotten tired of.
Adam may not have a working microphone, so we got plenty of them on this side.
Okay.
Okay, I want to squeeze in a couple of texts for Tom, because they came in at 312-981-7200. And Tom, a listener says, would love Tom's opinion on a vehicle with good fuel economy that is comfortable for a big man. I'm 6'3", 375, and I drive a lot of miles. That's Anthony. So, your opinion.
Funny, I was just talking about the RAV4 Prime and RAV4 Hybrid. That's Toyota's mid-sized car, and I don't fit in those very well, but the alternative is the Honda CR-V Hybrid, very good fuel economy, and pretty roomy. I fit in that just fine, and I'm a very big guy.
I would add that that RAV4 hybrid, and as a matter of fact, the two Ubers we took were RAV4 hybrids.
Yeah.
They're very comfortable vehicles.
And the one driver had driven 29,000
miles.
Trips.
Trips.
Yes, 29,000
wow.
trips. And he had three RAVs. I said, you should be doing a commercial for them.
Yeah.
Because the first one that came out, he had it, and he wore it out. And then he mm-hmm. went to another one, and now he's in the brand new, the 2024.
Yeah.
29,000. That's a lot of people. Okay. Listener says, no, the Brain Trust has stopped putting CD players in cars. But if you're ordering a new vehicle, Tom, can you ask that one be installed?
And wasn't it Lexus that is still putting CD players in, I think, one of their Sport Utes that we tested about a year or so ago?
I'm trying to think of the last Lexus that had a CD player. And it might have been the old GX, but that has been replaced. There is no Lexus currently. And that would have been the end of it, I think. I think CD players are now fully gone from cars. You can have one wired in aftermarket. It's a little bit of a hassle, and you're going to end up putting the CD player in the center console. I've seen that installation in a couple of vehicles. But no, there's no way to special order
also,
that anymore.
There's also portable CD players you can buy and then just kind of USB them into the car.
I have never done that. That's interesting. But yeah, there's probably a way to do that. Well, no, you could do that with an old Walkman if you can get a connector that works through USB.
And we have the smartest audience. We were talking about the vehicle that you road tested, the Lincoln, that gave you the option of scents in the car.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the listener said, did you know that the new car smell is actually something that is added to vehicles? And Tom, you probably know this. He said, look up the word Ozium, Ozium.
That I've heard this.
Was made in the 40s as a sanitizing spray, and it became the thing that people wanted in their car because it smelled like a new car.
We have had this conversation at the office a lot, and there are some brands in particular that smell very specific to that brand, Mercedes and BMW and Volkswagen. So the Germans, for some reason, if you are blindfolded and you've been in enough of those vehicles, you'll know that vehicle when you step into it. Yeah, it's very specific. And General Motors leather, for some reason, used to have a very distinct smell, kind of a burnt steak smell. I'm not sure it was the best smell in the world.
The not-so-good smell related to cars was I got to the point where the auto show.
I was just going to go there.
The smell of new carpeting, I would automatically flash onto the auto show, and I'd get this horrible headache.
Because at McCormick Place, literally every show they changed the carpet for. And when the auto show would come in, they would put down the new carpet. Oh. And the new carpet smell, we both got.
It was
borderline
terrible.
Migraines.
Yeah,
it was awful.
It was. And they were going, yes, but it's new. Yes, but it's killing us. And we did eventually find out that those odors were not healthy at all.
No, and weren't they related to formaldehyde for a while?
Yes, they were.
Well, on that happy note, any final blatant plugs for Consumer Guide, Tom?
This week, and I'm excited, and maybe I'm the only one super excited about this, but we have Jamie Butters on the podcast, and Jamie's the executive editor of Automotive News. So if you are an auto news geek, this is the guy you want to hear from. I've been trying to get him on the podcast for weeks and weeks and weeks, but he's finally made time for us, and that should be a fun interview.
You will probably want to ask him this off the air, but I gotta know, was he just abused as a kid with the last name of Butters?
That's a good question. I will ask him off the air.
You've got to believe that there were all kinds of things said about a kid named Butters. Well, we look forward to that, Tom, and we look forward to our next visit, which will be in the month of May. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Thanks a bunch. Go back to listening to your Mark Knopfler, and listeners are giving us a thumbs up on the music tonight. They loved your choice. So thank you, Tom.
Well, cool. It's great stuff.
Appreciate it.
We're going to do something that we alluded to earlier. When we started the show, obviously now it's Sunday, but Saturday was 420 day.
Right. It was Record Store Day, and it was 420 day.
Mm-hmm.
The day that, I guess it goes back to the 70s, when cannabis was celebrated, and the date 420 originally started out as the time of day. 420
right.
was when people would gather to, to celebrate cannabis or celebrate with cannabis.
And there is a song that we have been playing for years. It was done by the man who does our opening theme, Bob Young. And for those of you who are not familiar with Bob, an extraordinary talent. Sadly, Bob passed away a few years ago. Bob would come in the studio and say, I just wrote something new, and it would be this wonderful composition.
Played all the instruments on every song.
So this is a song that Bob wrote about, it might have been a personal experience, but it's perfect for 420. Bob Young, Roll Me a Long One.
Beer.
One more time.
I called the Salvation Army to pick up some faded old clothes. Then I found a bag in the pocket of a coat that I wore long ago. All chopped up and carefully measured was one OZ of Mexican gold. And the notion of illegal pleasure, hell, it jumped in my brain and took hold. So roll me a long one, light me a strong one, dust off the pipe and the bong. We'll put on some Pink Floyd, get dumb as an android, that the kids don't catch on. See, I used to smoke marijuana that I bought by the bag and the key. I'd get high whenever I'd wanna. Hell, it just didn't matter to me. And I don't think them doobies have hurt me. I don't think they've changed me a note. I support all the pot referendums, but I just keep forgetting to vote. So roll me a long one, light me a strong one, dust off the pipe and the bong. We'll put on some Pink Floyd, get dumb as an android, hope that the kids don't catch on. Let's dance. We'll pretend that we're back in the 60s in our tie-dyed embroidered peace sign. We'll go swimming in some public fountain, but maybe not naked this time. We'll cover our mattress with flowers like we did in our VW van, where we'll make love for hours and hours, or at least as long as we can. So roll me a long one, honey, light me a strong one, dust off the pipe and the bong. We'll put on some Pink Floyd, get dumb as an android, that the kids don't catch on. Play my guitar and my mouth harp, sing you some old Dylan song. Then we'll lie to the kids when they ask us why the Twinkies and cookies are gone. And maybe, just maybe tomorrow, though I really can't say for sure, if the guilt ain't too bad about the fun that we've had, I'll just go out and
find us some more. So roll me a long one, light me a strong one, dust off the pipe and the bong. We'll put on some Pink Floyd, get dumb as an android, hope that the kids don't catch on. We'll hope that the kids don't catch on.
Bob Young and Roll Me a Long One. He was such a talent.
Yeah.
And that was from Bob's second album called American Stories. And you don't even know about this. If you would like to hear that again, go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/Steve and Johnny Show. Last night, I was able to upload all of the songs from Bob's American Stories album to our YouTube page. So if you would like to hear more Bob Young,
because literally
it's some wonderful, wonderful stuff.
Not a Saturday goes by that somebody doesn't, after they hear our theme song, chime in and say, didn't he do? And tonight it was the Yacht Lyle Dean. Yes, he did the Yacht Lyle Dean.
Now, that's not on American Stories. I still have to. That was on his first CD.
Who's Bob Young?
Who's Bob Young? And I'll never forget the night we had him in the studio. We did an album release show, and he completely sold out of that. And the same thing happened with American Stories.
Yeah.
And people have been asking this. And last night, I was able to upload all of the stuff from American Stories. So go to youtube.com/Steve and Johnny Show, and you can hear all the cuts that Bob Young did for American Stories. And if you happen to download them, I'm sure that I won't tell.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob would love the fact that people are still interested in his music.
Absolutely. He wrote the WGN song.
Yep.
That was used in a commercial a couple of years ago. Beautiful song. The song Mothers and Daughters.
His Mother's Daughter, which is on American Stories. You can go to our YouTube page and you can hear that.
Yeah, a few months ago I sent that information to a listener who wanted to play that at a wedding reception.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, listen to it first, because it might move you to tears,
because
it always did me.
Yeah, it was such a talent.
Oh, so much so. Gosh.
Okay.
We're rapidly running out of time.
We are.
So stay with us. Again, 312-981-7200. Little unfinished business coming up right here on WGN.
Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. That's a dealer's choice from Julian. Good choice, Julian.
Yes, sir.
Allman Brothers, Midnight Rider, and sadly, we just lost Dickie Betts this past week.
Dickie Betts was 80 years old, and I guess he was still performing, and I believe... Okay, it's all coming to me now. There's a concert that's going to be in this area in 2 weeks, and the Tedeschi Trucks Band will be performing.
And Susan Tedeschi.
And Derek
and
Trucks.
And Derek Trucks.
And
Dickie
Betts would perform frequently with Derek Trucks because they're related. There's a lot of music in this area. It's just amazing. Just the other day, it was announced that Labor Day weekend, we've got Garth Brooks, Carrie Underwood, and Alabama for 3 days.
Yeah.
That's, wow. And then Memorial Day, Morgan Wallen and Jelly Roll.
Yeah.
I could see him.
That's going to be a cool concert.
I could
concert.
See him, and I was thinking, Bismarck. No, Jelly Roll.
Jelly Roll, who, what? He just recently said he's lost like 70
pounds. Yeah. It's going to make him different, though. He's going to get grumpy when he can't eat what he wants to eat.
His story is such a fascinating story. Yeah. What an interesting guy he is. Well, and great music.
I followed his wife for some time because a lot of people think that she's a, quote, gold digger because, you know, she's this flamboyant, larger-than-life bombshell. No, she was the one that got him straight. Mm-hmm. She got him on the straight and narrow. And he's very quick to tell people, you know what? It's not what you think.
Yeah.
I was the sad soul that needed saving, and mm-hmm. she came along and did that. It's a real interesting couple. Are you a fan, Caleb?
Yes, fan of the story, not of the music genre.
Really?
Yeah.
Too country?
A little too country.
Yeah, because it is hardcore. It also borders on religious, and then I have to laugh because I'm like, not really. Because people say, oh, it's like a religious... I've got a cousin that's coming down from Ohio mm-hmm. for the concert, and she's like, yeah, it's like going to church. And I'm like, yeah, it's not like the same church I went to. But okay, if that makes you feel good, that's great. She's never been to this area either, so she's real excited.
Oh, she's in for a shock.
Yeah. Actually, I'm happy we're leaving the week before she gets here, and she has a different last name, so we're okay. We're okay.
Yeah.
Because it could get really interesting. She may be calling us for bail money. I don't know. Lister says that Roll Me Along When reminds me of the good old days at SIU in Carbondale. For anybody who was around in the good old days of SIU in Carbondale, you know exactly what our listener at 630 was referring to.
I can imagine.
Yes. I was going to college at UT, about hour and a half south of Carbondale. And we used to leave Tennessee to go to Carbondale for a good time.
Yeah. What does that tell you?
We were like, that's where it's at. That's like, if you want to have a good time on a college campus. Of course, we were in a dry community. Our branch of University of Tennessee was a dry community. And the year that I was there, Playboy magazine came out with the list of colleges that have the highest alcohol consumption, and we were number one. Mm-hmm. But we were dry.
But you were number one.
We were number one, yeah.
Life finds a way.
Yes. Well.
We should remind you, coming up next week, we got a very special guest.
We do, yeah.
We're going to be talking, well, a couple very special guests. We're going to be talking with Marshall Chess. He's the son of Chess Records co-founder Leonard Chess, and they have a new album coming out that it's some remastered and some different versions of some things from the Chess Vaults.
Now, did you actually, you knew Leonard Chess, right? His dad?
I knew Leonard Chess. Marshall probably won't remember it, but I met Marshall Chess back in my pre-radio days when I was down at Chess Records for a session. Oh. This would have been in the mid-60s.
Wow.
And this was the original Chess Studios, work. 2120 South Michigan Avenue.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything there now? Because there's been talk
there
about...
is. That is where the... somebody can correct me on this, but I believe it's the Blues Heaven now.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
2120 South Michigan Avenue, which was also the title of the instrumental on the Rolling Stones 5x5 album, and they recorded that at the Chess Studios.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's got some great stories to tell, so we're looking forward to that. And we're also going to be talking about cicadas because...
Great Illinois Cicada Invasion of 2024.
Cicada-geddon. Thank you.
Yes.
And, it's going to be big.
Becca, if you guys don't know what we're talking about...
Do you guys know what we're talking about?
Do you have any clue what we're talking about?
Cicada invasion?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, because two broods of cicadas are coming out
for the first
ground.
Time in 17 years, and they're going to be converging on Chicago and Illinois like crazy.
And a few other states, but they don't count because I may lose my mind. I may absolutely go...
Excuse me?
And stop it. Because the sound can be...
Been there, done that.
The sound can be as loud as a jet engine.
Yeah, don't get those stuck in your house.
No.
But no, because this is an educational show, Becca.
Uh-oh.
I think you're old enough for this conversation. You missed the discussion we had roughly 2 weeks ago.
Okay. It's science, Steve.
When my child bride been doing some research.
It's science.
And found out what?
The zombie cicadas are coming to... coming out of the ground. Have you heard about the zombie cicadas?
Can I see your peer-reviewed sources?
No, seriously. The zombie cicadas, the problem is they are carrying an STD. They have a sexually transmitted disease.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. I heard this. Yeah.
That makes them lose their sex organs, mm-hmm. but it also makes them very, very horny.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be looking for action, and in looking for action, they're going to be infecting other cicadas. Mm-hmm. So that sound you hear is the sound when they're looking for action.
But also, there was the other statistic comparing to elephants?
Well, yes. When they urinate, their stream is stronger than an elephant. And so we have to be careful because they'll be in trees, and so they say, protect yourself. And here's the latest.
We're supposed
to protect our lawn furniture.
What?
Yes.
What are they doing with lawn furniture?
We'll be peeing on it. We have to get covers. We have to get covers.
You're going to wind up pressure washing holes into the fabric. Lord have mercy.
I knew all that already is because we had to run a story on it over at News 13. Over the cicada stuff.
It's really science. Yeah. It's not science fiction. Yeah, I know it sounds crazy. And I have to talk to you in real people terms so people will remember this instead of, you know, giving you scientific terms. So when they pee, it's as strong as an elephant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if they're up in a tree and you start feeling stuff on you, it's not rain. It could be them.
No.
And it's not good. So now they've now reported that, and we've got a brand new umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
Patio umbrella. We're going to keep the old one out until the cicadas die, and then we'll bring our new one.
You really don't get this kind of radio up and
seriously
down the dial.
I'm going to take
really
pictures.
Don't.
Oh my gosh.
Speaking of getting this kind of radio up and down the dial,
there's the Zamboni.
The Zamboni. The blue light is flickering.
A listener wanted.
I hear the Zamboni.
Do we have a Zamboni here? And I said, no, we have carpeting in the studio. We don't need to polish the floors the way we do back at WGN.
But the show is being run by the studio in Chicago.
Yes.
So the Zamboni is running through the studio. And that means it is time for our last call. If you would want to be our last caller, 312-981-7200. That number again is 312-981-7200. And if you are our last call, you will win some goodies from our prize list as long as you have not won anything from this here radio place within the past 60 days.
And can I finish a thought? Next Saturday.
I don't know, can you?
Next Saturday, we'll have an expert on talking about cicadas. I never got that far.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm all about the science.
Yeah, right.
I'm here to get you people ready for this. It's a big
ready
deal.
For what?
This cicada-geddon. It's going to be big.
Okay. I think we need to break.
We got to say goodnight. You know it's getting late. Tomorrow is another day, my friend. All right, people, it's time to go home. Yep.
Yep.
Losing time. We're ready to head on out. So let's go. You don't have to go home.
Yeah, you really kind of do.
But you can't stay here.
No, can't stay here. And no, we're not going to play the rest of that song, but if you would like to hear it, look up Red Peters and the closing song. And reminds me.
Yes.
I was telling you about how you could listen to all of Bob Young's songs from American Stories. Go to youtube.com/Steve and Johnny Show. When you get to our page, you will see different playlists and look up favorites. So it's under the favorites grouping, and you will see a bunch of other things, but you will see all the songs from Bob Young's American Stories album.
As it should be. So this is the segment of the show, as we're wrapping up, We say, we want to let you be the cherry on top of our five-hour show.
Mm-hmm.
Don't feel any pressure whatsoever. You don't have to have anything fabulous to talk about. You don't need to know science. Just stop by and say hi. And we randomly choose a caller that becomes our last caller. And that person, if they qualify, if they've not won anything in the last 60 days, mm-hmm. they win some pretty cool prizes for being that cherry on top of our five-hour show. So, Cindy. All right.
Cindy or Sydney?
We'll let the person sign in.
Okay, sign in with your name. Hello.
Oh, is it me?
Yes, it's you.
Oh.
Are you Cindy?
I am.
Well, you are. You. Well, congratulations on being Cindy.
It's nice to meet you, Cindy. Where are you calling from?
You too, from Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, Sleepy Hollow. Yeah, I'm not going to make any headless horseman jokes.
No Ichabod Crane jokes, yes.
Why are you up at this hour of the morning?
I'm listening to you, of course.
Good. Just like the way we wrote it, right?
Are you normally up at this hour of the night or morning?
No. Well, yeah, I listen to you every Saturday night.
Well, thank you.
Well, what does your Sunday hold for you? What do you got planned?
Oh, my gosh. Laundry.
And a little more laundry?
Yeah. Okay.
That's it.
All right, well, you're listening.
Okay, no, I have to ask, do you use fabric softener or not?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Please tell me it's not a smelly fabric softener.
It is not.
Good. Because that's really getting out of control. We had somebody come to our house the other day, and they had so much fabric softener on their clothes when they left. Their scent hung around for another hour.
Literally,
as
we were opening the door, the scent was coming in before he was.
And then I said, Downey, now. Oh, my gosh. Bless his heart. And he was rubbing his nose like he was having an allergy attack, and I wanted to tell him,
allergic
take off
to
those
it.
Damn clothes. Yes. You're killing yourself, or your wife is killing you. I don't know.
And he was doing a spring checkup, so everything he touched had that smell.
Smelled like Downey. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, did you have to have a snack while we were doing the show tonight?
I did not.
Oh, well, you know what? The night is young. You could hang up and have yourself a snack.
Go grab some ice cream.
Well, during the break, we were debating what we were going to have because we ate breakfast at 1:30 on Saturday. And we haven't had anything. So during that last segment, when you hear the Red Peter's tomb, we're saying, what are we going to have? Is it going to be grilled cheese tonight? Is it going to be peanut butter toast? What's it going to be? So thankfully, we have a short trip home, so we can get home and eat by 2:30.
Either that or we'll be eating the fender of the car.
That's right.
Well, as long as there are no protesters, hold it up over here.
Amen. Goodness. Were you listening to John the other day when we called in?
I was.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It was crazy.
It was. It really was. But we've come full circle. That's where we started the show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm so happy you got in tonight, Cindy. Thank you
so
much.
Thank you. Me too.
And you are going to be wearing an official retro WGN t-shirt, and you're going to get your very own American Weathermakers weather station. And
Thank you.
Like to say, for anybody who's listened to this radio station for a while, you remember the days of the Wally Phillips and the Ladybug Pendant Watch.
With Seymour Paisen scarves.
They became highly collectible. Well, now the weather station is like the hottest thing out there, so you're going to get one of your
own. Oh, that's great. Yes. I've wanted one for a long time. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for listening, too. We really appreciate knowing you're out there, too. Thank you, Cindy.
And if you can hold on for a couple seconds, Julian will get some personal information from you, so hold on for a couple seconds. And
you know, this is a well-oiled machine.
Yeah.
The reality is, it's pretty amazing that we can do a show back in Chicago, sitting 1,000 miles away, high atop the Charles Hilton.
Yes.
What's the official term?
Wait a minute. Let me get the script. Yes. High atop the Charles Hilton Center for Advanced Technology and Hospitality Management at Gulf Coast State College in Panama City, Florida, from the studios of WKGC-FM.
That's right.
And speaking of that, we have to thank Becca and Caleb for hanging out with us for the past couple hours.
Yes.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Becca, what are your plans for Sunday?
Church.
Church, and then work, and somewhere in between all that, I might sleep.
Because Becca also works for Channel 13 here.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And Caleb, you... Actually, you came here to rest a little bit because your schedule is so crazy. You said, yeah, I'll come. I'll do a little check ride with you guys because I get to sit here for a while.
Yeah, definitely, exactly.
Yeah, because you've been taking classes. You've got your master's behind you, but now you're taking more classes because he's going to Greece for the entire month of June. Pretty impressive. Steve, I've said I've wanted to go for a week. He's going for a whole month.
And I'm taking my girl with me.
Yeah,
so.
Thank you.
No one's jealous at all.
See, I was going to, but Caleb and his girl got our spaces.
Oh, yeah, right.
Good save.
Real quick mention, Monday is Earth Day. Monday evening is Passover, so happy Passover if you're looking forward to Passover. And today is Kindergarten Day, and let's all remember what we learned when we were in kindergarten. Be good to each other. Don't hit each other. Wash your hands. Flush the toilet. You know, all of those things that you learned when you were five.
Yeah.
Let's remember it on Kindergarten Day.
We have to thank our crew in Chicago, Adam Phillips, who has been manning the big plug. Adam, are you near a microphone?
He's shaking. He doesn't have one in the studio.
Okay.
Yeah. See, and, they wisely said, we're not going to let engineering have access to a microphone.
And Brett Jackson, and our thanks to Ron and Gabe. And Julian, thank you, thank you, thank you.
You are very welcome.
And what are your plans for the weekend?
Sleep. So,
I was going to say.
Amen.
He's going to continue his nap. Right, Julian?
I might catch some sun tomorrow.
It's going to be cold overnight.
I love the cold.
Well, good. Yes.
You're the one.
Well, it's going to be 80 here and humid.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you.
Please send some of that this way.
No. Gabe, what are you doing?
I had to drive in with my heater on tonight.
Oh.
Throw a sweater on.
And look at it this way.
I did, and I was still cold.
Oh.
It's a little less time for cicadas because it's got to be 65 degrees in the ground before they come out.
Gabe, if you're getting colder, go into Dave Ennett's office.
Yeah, right.
Actually, it gets just as warm in the traffic booth, which I was in just a few days ago.
It's very, very warm, yes.
Dave has his own space heater.
He does.
Okay, we are pretty much out of words, I believe. Thanks for hanging out with us.
We'll be back here next Saturday night, so please do tune in.